Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, this is Blake the Eccentric, and I want to invite you to check out my new show on Freedomizer Radio, The Eccentric Perspective. It's sort of a red pill, blue pill, going down the rabbit hole kind of show, featuring outside-the-box politics, philosophy, and gonzo journalism. But be warned, with knowledge comes responsibility, and you might not see the world the same way again, as I will attempt to open your mind, speak to your common sense, and challenge your critical thinking skills. So please join me Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon to 1:30 Pacific Time. Once again, that's Eccentric Perspective, only on Freedomizer Radio. All right, greetings and welcome. Let me adjust my headset here so I'm not screaming in everyone's ear. All right. Greetings and welcome. We'll start this over. It is Wednesday, January 30th of 2013. And I am Blake the Eccentric, and this is the Eccentric Perspective on Freedomizer Radio. And I will be here live for the next hour and a half covering the latest news and current events. Number to call in, 347-324-3704, whatever you want to talk about, help drive the show. Questions, comments, concerns, criticisms, anything goes, so I will be here for that. And, well, where to begin today? Still trying to get into the chat room here, if it'll let me. You know, everything's going a little bit slow. Oh, well. All right. Anyway. And I'm getting texted or something. Who knows? Oh, yeah. And that's Brian texting me, asking me if I'm on. Yeah, I'm on. I don't know if Brian's here, hopefully, or maybe. Said he might show up in the chat room. But, yes, I am here. And I suppose I can get to the news now as soon as I get all that technical stuff out of the way here. All right. So, all right, Drudge Report, right now, top headline. I've actually got a few late-breaking stories. Nothing red-linked, no major emergencies. I think there is another shooting somewhere in Phoenix. I'll see how that develops, but doesn't look like, well, of course it's bad, but it's nothing, no Sandy Hook or anything, thankfully. So let's see, the headline story, got a good picture here of good old Ben Bernanke, and the headline is called Keep Pumping. And let's see, leads us to a story from Reuters. I haven't even checked out yet. Called Fed Keeps Stimulus in Place as Economy Paused. So the Federal Reserve on Wednesday left in place its monthly $85 billion bond buying stimulus plan, saying economic growth has stalled, but indicating the pullback was likely temporary. Sure it is. So describing the nation's job market as continuing its modest pace of improvement. The Fed's wording on that. Right. It's modest pace of improvement, which contradicts a few other stories I pulled up a little bit earlier, including a good little, it's always good to see a little Rick Santelli meltdown, the latest. So we got growth. Let's see, here's the quote from the Fed, I guess, whoever the Fed mouthpiece is today. Growth and economic activity paused in recent months, in large part because of weather-related disruptions and other transitory factors. Oh, okay. I guess it was all just weather-related disruptions and other, quote, transitory factors. Okay. Well, there's your explanation from the infallible Fed. All right, moving on, it added business investment had picked up as financial conditions eased in recent months. Right. Business investment. Does that mean, I guess, putting money into the stock market? Is picking up the stock market, of course, is, I guess, is it record highs? I don't even know. But I guess that would be, is that a result? I guess going behind the numbers here, does that have anything to do with maybe the massive quantitative easing, the endless money printing, perhaps creating a huge bubble to go along with the giant bond bubble, the debt bubble, and they're buying all their own debt back because nobody else wants it. So, yeah, I think we're getting to that point. I think they're completely out of solutions, and their latest excuse is weather-related disruptions and other transitory factors. All right, does everyone feel better? All right, Kansas City Fed President Esther George, in her first ever policy vote, dissented against continued Fed stimulus. All right, everybody, stop the presses here. Okay, looks like somebody, a big one within, is actually dissenting. Maybe she disagrees with the, quote, weather-related disruptions and other transitory factors. So she is going to say, let's see, the Fed's bond buying program is part of the central bank's unprecedented efforts to spark a stronger economic recovery and drive down unemployment. Right, because they care so much, they're trying so hard, and they just can't quite get it right here. But you know, whatever. I mean, how do you foresee weather-related disruptions and other transitory factors? You know, if it wasn't for that, I'm sure everything would be turning around. All right, so the Fed has kept overnight interest rates near zero since late 2008. So here we are, just a little over 4 years later with our near zero interest rates. But, you know, I don't know what more excuses we need to hear here. And it has tripled its balance sheet to about $3 trillion through its purchases of securities, which are aimed at pushing longer-term borrowing costs lower. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just part of a long-term plan. And, you know, these first 4 years, it just needed these first 4 years, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how many more excuses do we continue to give the Fed before we realize that's the problem. Of course, there was a nice little video clip. I think I put it on my Twitter feed the other day, actually yesterday, with from Davos in the Iceland president talking about, or is it the I don't even know, one of the high-ranking officials, talking about how they've turned their economy around once they, you know, they started saying, you know what, we don't owe this debt. I don't like what these people are doing. Let's change things, and they're having record growth right now. I think maybe it's time to follow their model. But, yeah, you know, I didn't see this in this Reuters article yet. We'll see. That's what I want to start seeing is, like, hey, maybe we should start doing what Iceland is doing. Maybe we should just write off all of this debt, not sign on to it. But anyway, let's try to move on to some other stuff here. Have I even gotten in the chat room yet? No. Oh, now I finally got my options up. Yes, I'm on today. Let's see here. Am I not getting any audio here? It'd be a lot of wasted energy. No, I think it's, I'm going to say this is just on Brian's end today. All right, give me a minute here. Am I not getting audio, Brian? I've got a major delay here as I'm trying to type. No, there is a server down. I don't know. Is anybody getting audio here? It says I'm on. Everything's fine. I don't know. sorry for the delay here. I'm just trying to make sure that I've got audio here before I'm just speaking into the ether and just entertaining myself, I suppose. Fortunately, I have to communicate by typing. All right. Yeah, I'll have to check back on that as I peruse around. I know I've got a... There's got to be audio. So, all right, I'm just going to keep going. I'll double-check here. I don't know if it's on my end or Brian's end, but I think the audio is going. So, anywho, let's see. What else is next on the financial front here? We've got a report out of the Hill. These are a couple other articles here I haven't even checked on yet. One is IRS hiring new employees faster. Isn't that great? There's one industry that needs more job growth. Why not the IRS? Something that everybody just absolutely loves. Everybody loves the IRS. Everybody wants to work for the IRS. And I guess if there's a, yeah, somebody's hiring. Here we go. IRS is doing a better job at getting new employees on board quickly, a new federal audit has found. This is the what would you call that? The wing of the Federal Reserve, the collection arm. All right, of the lovely Federal Reserve that's doing such a great job, has been really trying hard, really putting together a great plan for the last 4 years. It's just with their zero interest rates, buying up all their own debt and such. But just the last quarter, it's really been due to some bad weather. And sorry, I dropped the article. I forget. So was it transitory problems or I don't remember. Whatever. That's the latest Fed BS. All right. So the Treasury Department's Inspector General for Tax Administration found the IRS has almost met the goal set by the Office of Personnel Management to bring on new hires in 80 days or less. By contrast, the agency said in 2009 that it was taking an average of 157 days, or roughly 5 months, to hire staffers. Really? So, I mean, hey, there's some great news. It's almost twice as easy to train some new IRS people as it was 5 months ago. That's a miracle. That's wonderful. So in its report, the Inspector General found the IRS had implemented a more automated hiring process and better controls over the process. I'm moving on. IRS makes me sick. All right, so next. White House, GOP responsible. Okay, here we go. The other reason why the economy hasn't turned around yet, of course, is, it's obviously the GOP's fault. I mean, who else could it be? White House Press Secretary Jay Carney laid the blame for a surprise economic contraction. Yes, contraction, as I tie the rest of this financial news together. Before I get to that, I'll just start here. I'll give you a little preview, I guess. Almost said prequel. I guess that wouldn't make much sense. All right, so Jay Carney laid the blame for a surprise economic contraction squarely at the feet of congressional Republicans on Wednesday, saying economic threats during the fiscal cliff negotiations had prevented important defense spending. Oh, all right. Well, I guess maybe we should put Jay Carney in charge. Perhaps that's we'll give him Jay Carney. We'll make him dictator for a week, so he can turn the economy around and and all the rest of our problems. All right, so here's the quote from Jay Carney. Our economy is facing a major headwinds, and that's Republicans in Congress, Carney said. The Commerce Department projected Wednesday that the nation's gross domestic product shrank, actually frickin' shrank, point, which is where I'm going to get to in a minute here, shrank by 0.1% in the fourth quarter of 2012. Carney said that was partially attributable to the threat of sequestration. Wow, so some big words on Jay Carney. All right. Which would implement across-the-board spending cuts if a long-term deficit is not reached? Deficit deal is not reached. This is political brinkmanship that results in one primary victim. That's American taxpayers and the American middle class, Carney said, acknowledging the GDP projection was bad news. But hey, it's all the Republicans' fault. Let's get that clear. All right, so I don't think any time you see a reduction in economic growth that it's good news, he said. What, really? I don't know. I mean, I gotta pause here. I don't even know what to say. Carney said economic observers were rightly appalled by the threat of sequestration. I can't even pronounce that. Or a default to drive a debt deal and charge that Republicans were harming the economy to the benefit of the wealthiest Americans. Aren't they always? It can't be. We'll let sequester kick in because we insist tax loopholes remain in place for corporate jet owners, Carney said. Blah, blah, blah. All right, more partisan nonsense. Maybe time to start doing a big house cleaning. Well, yeah, maybe not. Maybe if we could just get rid of all these awful GOP people in the way, then the brilliant minds and the big vocabulary of Jay Carney can change everything, turn it all around, and we can all apologize for all the work that they're trying to do. It's just the damn GOP, you know, their loopholes and their, you know, their big Koch brothers private jets that have just really ruined the economic recovery over the last 4 years, blah, blah, blah. Moving on, what is this all about? And, of course, that would be the GDP. Surprise drop for the U.S. in the fourth quarter. This is out of CNBC. The U.S. economy posted a stunning drop of 0.1%. We actually went negative in the fourth quarter, defying expectations for slow growth and possibly providing incentive for more Federal Reserve stimulus. Oh, well, there's the answer. Right there, right in front of us. We need more Federal Reserve stimulus. All right, so I don't know. You got your fourth quarter. I thought that was kind of a, you know, Christmas time. You got your Black Friday. You got extra, you know, retail hiring extra people buying tons of Christmas gifts. And I don't know. I don't even. You would think there would be some growth, perhaps, and then maybe drop off a little bit in the next quarter. I don't actually really know, but I do know that the economy is going backwards, which is probably not good here. And I don't think it's all just the Republicans' fault. I'm not so sure that the Federal Reserve has all the answers. Certainly no answers. So I think they're the problem. But anyway, according to CNBC, I guess we need more Federal Reserve stimulus. So the economy shrank from October through December for the first time since the recession ended, hurt by the biggest cut in defense spending in 40 years, fewer exports, and sluggish growth in company stockpiles. Commerce Department said Wednesday the economy contracted at an annual rate of 0.1% in the fourth quarter. That's a sharp slowdown from the 3.1% growth in the July to September quarter. All right, so the surprise contraction could raise fears about the economy's ability to handle tax increases that took effect in January and looming spending cuts. All right, anyway, moving on. What's next? I guess the last one I've got to share on the economy is Rick Santelli responds to the negative GDP report. We are now Europe. So Rick Santelli made a stunning observation Wednesday about the shocking report that the economy actually shrunk in the fourth quarter last year. We are now Europe, he declared on CNBC's Squawk Box. Hey, Joe, Santelli said. When you act like Europe, you get growth rates like Europe, and our discussions with economists sounds like we're in Europe. They have the same discussions constantly. They're always doing the right thing, he continued. They're always thinking they know better. And this is the kind of growth. We have become Europe. We are now Europe. And Steve Weizmann pushed back. Hey, we reduced federal spending, government spending by 15%. Which part of that's not Europe, don't you get? And final line from Rick Santelli. And why do we need to reduce government spending, asked Santelli, because we run trillion-dollar deficits, for crying out loud. All right, so CNBC is such a joke. But, yeah, I guess Rick Santelli's good for a few entertaining sound bites now and then. And this was out of Newsbusters. I'll probably tweet that out. But anyway, yeah, it's time to get out of this economic news unless somebody wants to sound off, jump in the conversation. Oh, I do have Larry on hold. Maybe Larry can add some sanity to this madness. Larry, what's going on, brother?
Buenos tardes, señor. ¿Cómo está mi amigo?
Bien, ¿y tú?
E2, oh, C3, D4, you know,
right.
Anyway, yeah, C4, boom. Hey,
yeah.
First of all, they didn't really cut the overall budget, whatever, because in reality, all they did was cut back on the increase, which is all a big scam anyway, because they say, okay, this is what we're going to increase. And they go way beyond really what they project at once anyway. And so when they reduce it, they only reduce it by a little bit. And that way they say, well, see, we're cutting the budget. No, you didn't really cut the budget. You just cut the phony-ass increase that you wanted to do in the first place. So we're kind of getting scammed on that. As far as Federal Reserve, they're not part of us, okay? They're controlled by the, you know, elitist families that look at you and me and everybody else as little peon slaves anyway, so them and the IRS are little
collection agents.
Larry,
they're good people. They're trying really hard. It was just some transitory issues and some weather problems in the last quarter.
Oh.
And it's also the GOP, so...
I'm sorry, my
what
bad.
Do you think about making Jay Carney the dictator for a week or so, and then maybe we could fix everything?
He's a dictator? Making him a dictator? Yeah, he's a tater, all right. But anyway, I'm not going to go there. As far as taxing the jet owners, you know,
yeah.
Does that include the Rockefellers, Nancy Pelosi, and Dianne Feinstein?
Jay Carney was very clear on that. I don't know if you heard that, but it's the GOP, Larry.
Not the actual owners of corporate.
The
jets.
Other ones, yes. They.
So we can't go and
they fly on special
Dianne
jets.
Feinstein,
yeah, right.
And. Oh, okay. I misunderstood. I'm sorry. I thought we were going to get to tax those traders. Really, I'd like to see them do a different kind of swinging. You know, there is so much into swinging in California.
No.
I'd like to show them a Texas-style kind of swinging for treason, but that's another story altogether.
I thought we were going to, I thought you changed your tune on that. You were going to give them a little taste of their own medicine.
Yeah, after a while of their taste of their own medicine, eventually, while they're waiting on death row after their fair trial, then they get their punishment. That's just, the death row thing, that was just temporary. You know, making them live in agony for 15 or 20 years, and then putting them out of their misery eventually.
But they're entertaining. Why would we want to put them under? I mean, I think I like the reality show idea.
No, I don't. That doesn't really give them any reason for behaving themselves. And this is the problem with most of America.
Right.
You're playing pickup skits while they're playing tri-level chess. All right? And because of you're wanting to play nice, you're going to lose. Because they're not playing nice. You can't play nice with bullies that want to kick your butt. Okay? Because they're going to win every time. That's just, I mean, you can't go and have your hands tied behind your back and go into a boxing ring and fight against a 250-pound heavyweight boxer that's coming in guns a-blazing. Right?
Well, no, we're still we're quarantining them. They're in a prison of sorts. It's just a different style.
Yeah, but then their friends come in and break them out of prison and put them back in power.
No,
and
they'd be
no
on
good.
Camera all the time.
Their friends come and but the problem is their friends come, break them out of prison, and put them back in power. And you have to remove all of the elements. That's just not going to happen. And, oh, man, that truck kind of went out of control.
Have you seen the Truman Show, Larry?
I saw parts of it. I really didn't. Like,
it's all good. It's a complex issue. We can get into more another day. Yeah.
Is the chat working? Is the chat room working?
The chat room's working, but Brian was in here. I don't think he was able to get audio. So
I was having a difficult time. I wound up getting the Truth Train instead of your show, and I couldn't even get the chat part of it to pull up on the screen. I didn't know what to do.
Well, the block does reset before my show, so it does have to be refreshed. I don't know.
I did. No, I
did. Oh, you did.
Yeah,
then I don't know. People can get it off the Blog Talk.
Whatever. But
there's no chat there. Uh-oh. Larry? All right, I think we lost Larry. All right, yeah, it's all right. We're approaching the break anyway. He's totally off there. Actually, let me take I got another quick call here I can jump to, and I'll just push the break back a little bit. 443, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm with Larry on that, how he was saying that we shouldn't be playing nice with these guys because they're not and we're going to lose. So I was saying yesterday, all day long, I was thinking the exact same thing. You know, I came to the reality that I don't think that we have a chance against these people because they got so much money, etc. So,
yeah, but the economy is on the verge of collapse. I mean, we've got negative growth right now. They've got no solutions. You got a fiscal cliff. You got a bond market potential collapse coming up.
I don't care about any of that, to tell you the truth. I do, but my theory is like this. Like, I'm pretty sure that a lot of these truth movement people have been, I'm not saying you, I'm not trying to say that you are. Cause
all
you
right,
sound
you
like
can
honest.
Say whatever you want.
But
yeah,
they do have a lot of disinformant agencies and agents that go on to the radios and internet radios and they tell the people, oh, yeah, don't do nothing, calm down. You know, just wait, whatever, so forth and so on. So say if that is true.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about
so
the Drake
stuff. So say if that is true,
while
all these wars in Syria are going on, people are dying left and right. We're just sitting here talking about the news and stuff. That's what they want. They don't want people. They want people to be stuck on their couches saying, oh, I'm not going to get up and do nothing because I'm going to get arrested for even saying a bad word out loud. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
the laws are all regulated, so we can't do nothing.
Yeah, because there are people. Yeah, I know what you're saying with the disinfo. Because there's people saying like, oh yeah, you just got to sit back, and we've got all these good guys that are undercover, and they're going to take out all the bad guys in the government, and you can just sit there. And that's not good. And I don't know what happened to Drake. He's probably been completely discredited. But, I know what you're saying. There's definitely some interesting characters in the alternative media, for sure.
That's funny you said that, because I've been listening to him since day one, and I don't know. I mean, to me, it's hard to pick apart the thing, but Who knows? I mean,
yeah, he sounds credible. I think he might even believe some of this stuff. He could be being fed a bunch of bad information, and he's just throwing it around. That could be, too. I don't know. It's a complex issue, but the guy's been saying this for like a year at least. Oh, yeah, you just got to sit back. We're going to take care of everything, and nothing's happened.
Exactly. So I'm at the point right now where I'm just like, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, man. I think people, we should get a bunch of kids together. Because, look, here we are right now trying to figure things out, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The only thing I could see is just go straight up get, like, riot gear, juggernaut style, and just try to take things over. But other than that, I really don't see it going anywhere. I don't know.
I don't think either side is organized enough to do that. I mean, it sounds like an intriguing idea, but I think we're in the information war right now, and we got to exhaust every possibility before we try anything physical.
You realize what's going on, though, in the meantime, what they're doing. They're literally, like, playing the worst games, like, kind of tell, oh, yeah, you know, like, we'll send the military in parts of Africa and parts of, I don't know. It's just crazy. And then
yeah, they're trying
wars
to,
where they're
yeah.
not at. Like, why don't they send the U.S. military and all the other countries in Syria and just say, everyone stop fighting?
Yeah, no,
they're laughing while all these people are dying. We're sitting there procrastinating about what they're doing, and that's it. No one's sitting there and saying, look, let's, you know, join up and, you know, whatever. But the laws are on their side. We can't sit there and walk around with guns and get carry permits, all that crap. So I don't know. I just don't really see it going anywhere. Yesterday I was saying, look, I had enough. Woke up this morning, was like, look, let's just, you know, see what's going on. There's no news or nothing really going on that's big. So they're probably planning something else, another bullshit, whatever.
Yeah, it is a possibility. But look at the Sandy Hook thing. I mean, that's really kind of, you know, nobody's really buying that story anymore. Nobody trusts the government. Nobody trusts the media. So I don't know if they'll be able to pull off something like another Sandy Hook thing without it coming back on them. It's going to be really scrutinized because they've got no credibility anymore. So I think there's been some big advancements. I think you're seeing a lot of people waking up. And, you know, I don't know exactly what's going to happen next or what they might be trying to do. They could be, of course, they're going to be desperate to try to save themselves, but at the same time, I don't know if they can get away with another big attack or a false flag or anything like that if they, you know, if they choose to do something like that.
I don't know, man. I'm freaking out. I'm losing my patience, but I guess I got to just wait, let things unfold. I don't really know. I don't trust these people at all.
Yeah, no,
I
know what you're saying. It's it's tough, but things are moving really quickly now. So we're definitely going to see some things moving quick. it's all kinds of things that could be coming down in the next couple of months. So we shall see. But so what else is going on, Nemo?
No, and I was looking at this thing. Did you hear about that webcast about Obama being like having all these indictments by, I think his name's LaRouche or something like that.
Yeah, Lyndon LaRouche. Yeah, he's an interesting character. Yeah.
Did you see the entire like 110 minute video on it?
Not recently, no. He's been a frequent guest on Alex Jones. He's been calling for the impeachment of Obama. There is a trial February 15th with Orly Tates, the Supreme Court. You're seeing new developments on his identity being revealed, so we'll see how that develops. You've got, you know, Eric Holder's been found guilty of contempt. I think there's still some progress. There's a new development on that story as well. So we shall see.
It's scary, though, because when it comes with the news, you don't even know if they could, like, say, for instance, I heard this guy, David Windmiller, whatever, when he came on the show but they were saying, I'm a postmaster general, and that I indicted or I fired like thousands of judges, and but there's no documents on it. So they could be doing the same exact thing with all this news, making up all this false propaganda on the truth movement and saying, oh, yeah, guys, listen to this. And everyone's just, I don't know. To me, it just sounds, I'm just trying not even to pretend that anything even happened. Just clear my mind, act like whatever, forget about it.
No, I hear you, but they've lost control of reality. Their media is way down in numbers. Congress has got the 9% approval rating. People are waking up in droves, and I don't know if they can get away with some of the things they might want to try to get away with if they can. So, and as people continue to suffer under this economy, they're just going to keep waking up more and more. So the numbers are really building on our side. So I haven't, you know, given up hope yet. We shall see. And I'm just hoping they don't do anything desperate and stupid. But,
yeah, you know, I do hope that, you know, there are good people on the truth movement that actually will come through and that aren't playing nice. So hopefully, you know, we got people on our side that are just, like, not playing nice. So who knows, you know?
Yeah, no, it's complicated. That's for sure. So we shall see. I'm trying to play nice because maybe that would I guess it's a complicated issue.
I'm the same way. I'm just trying to be a nice person, but, like, I'm just holding my anger in, and it's just I'm not trying to get used to this, so.
No, I hear you. It's been a really frustrating – I mean, I couldn't believe how stressed out I was the last couple of months with all this gun control scare and, you know, confiscation and registration and stuff like that. That was really making me uncomfortable. But, I mean, we've seen a lot of progress. I mean, the gun control debate was, won pretty easily. So that's big news, and Feinstein's bill is going to go down, and they've all backed off because they couldn't win. It was just all about playing on emotions and not playing with logic, and it kind of, you know, figuratively backfired on them. So that was a big deal. So we'll see how. I mean, obviously they're probably going to come for the First Amendment next. So we'll see how that plays out with trying to shut down the internet. But I hear you. So
yeah, I did hear that they were trying to make some type of laws with public relations and journalists on the internet saying that it's going to be banned. I don't know, but yeah, they're on their left. Yeah, they're going crazy. And who knows, you know?
Yeah,
yeah,
no,
thanks again for taking my
reality.
What were you saying?
Oh, yeah, they're losing their grip on reality, so they don't control things like they used to. So there's been some positive changes, but yeah. Certainly an exciting time, and with the way that things have been moving the last couple of years, you know, something's got to give at some point. And yeah, I'll be looking forward to this trial coming up in 2 weeks with Obama's identity problem and Orly Tates, and is that her name? And then Sheriff Arpaio. So there's some new developments coming up. So we'll see how those turn out and how the media covers them. But yeah, it's good to hear from you, Nemo.
Yeah, thanks again.
All right, man. Take care, bud. All right. There goes Nemo, and I am on the let me take a couple minutes here for break, and I will be back on the other side. And, get to the rest of the news. So stick around, and I'll be back shortly.
Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life. Shade the Motion Picture. A view into the globalist domain. And Annabella Semperma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We have never let them know that the world government has been identified, and they thought they just cloned the world economy to bring in a worldwide police state.
blood. Speak up, speak out.
Shane the Motion Picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at ShaneTheMotionPicture.com.
We are Critical Immunity with Larry and Renee. Our show will cover current events, national health news, nutrition, emergency preparedness, and organic farming, and various implements and tools to thrive and survive. We hope you tune in and join in our discussion of health, liberty, preparedness, and survival. Join our hosts, Larry and Renee, with guest callers always welcome.
Oh, you want to heal the world? Oh, you can't do that. You know, you got to elect the right people. No, change your thinking. Change the way you feel. Change the way you do things. Do everything for peace. Like John Lennon said, walk for peace. You take a shower for peace. Do whatever you do for peace.
Every time you do that, you set a ripple effect out.
Because we live in a vibrational world, and your brain is the instrument. To learn how to direct and control your mind, you guys are superheroes. You know, they don't want you to know that, but you are. You guys are the most powerful people in the world.
We see the power in you to change your thinking. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, only on Freedomizer Radio.
Lindsay Williams on Freedomizer Radio.
Proof Negative, I love the title that you use on your radio. I've thought about it ever since we talked on off of the air the other day. And I'd say that's an excellent title for a talk show host.
All right, and I am back, Blake the Eccentric Perspective on Freedomizer Radio. So, let's see here. Where to go? Yeah, I probably should have had something ready by now, but I'm trying to find like a really good second story here on Drudge. Of course, the big news is on the economy. And let's see, of course, let me see. I thought I wanted to get to some of this immigration topic. I think that's something I haven't really gotten into yet. And I don't know if I had something. I think it was a little bit more exciting on Monday and Tuesday. Oh, here we go. I did find an article today. National Journal, a less obvious reason why GOP should cave on Obama's immigration plan. It's conservative. So I don't even know what to say on this one. Got some of the top panel, some of the top lawmakers that are involved in this. I don't really trust any of them. Especially your McCain and Lindsey Graham and forget some of the other the big ones. Schumer, I believe, is up there. And Marco Rubio, I don't necessarily think is a bad guy, but maybe he's not seeing some of the bigger picture. I think when you're siding with some of these people, when you start seeing some of these real old guard people all coming together on stuff, I start to question everything involved here. It's such a complicated issue and one I've stayed out of for many reasons. And to just sort of legalize all these illegals, we're looking at maybe 11 million as an extremely conservative number and perhaps 20 million or more, and how that's going to affect the economy. We've already got a disastrous economy. I don't know how this is going to work. And the other thing is we start getting into, people have brought up, I think it's the Clower-Piven strategy, I believe, but also just, who are these people going to, if you're going to make all these people legal, who are they going to vote for? And I think McCain is worried that they're going to have to be on their side with all these, southern states with high populations of illegals could start swinging votes. It's a complicated issue, of course. I think we might have, if we're going to legalize, there's a lot of things that are going to have to be changed in this country before they can do something like that. I'm not even saying the overall idea is horrible or bad, but I think you're going to have to get rid of both parties before you can consider something like this. I don't know why the Republicans think that this huge base, let's just say it's 15 million, 20 million more people that are going to be voting for, that could be swinging the outcome. I mean, they're probably going to vote for entitlements, I would think. I don't know, at least up in the front, at least in the beginning. So I don't know what they think this is going to do. I mean, this could absolutely break the economy, I would think. I haven't seen any good ideas here, nothing that I'm excited about. I don't know how we're going to handle this. I don't know. You don't want to send these people back to where they came from. Like I said, complicated. I'd be willing to hear calls on this. Maybe I'm not getting this whole idea here. I don't trust, like I said, I don't trust the people involved. We've got a horrible economy. I don't know where they think they're going to put these people or how they're going to vote. It's certainly going to destroy, it's probably going to be good for the Democrats up in front. And then you're talking about Clower Piven. You're talking about getting a ton of people on the government dole that are going to vote for people that are giving them entitlements. Certainly that would work out well for the Democrats, at least in the short term. And when there's no jobs already, what are you going to do? I guess super complicated. I don't even want to touch it. I really don't. But certainly I'm going to have to pay a lot more attention to this. I'd love to see the both parties just eliminated. That way you wouldn't have a voting block for either side. You could people just vote for whoever they wanted to. That's another complicated story. There's going to be a lot of changes that need to have to happen before something like this can be done. And I don't know. I'm sorry, I don't have a better answer. If anybody's out there, if anybody have a good, here you go, Brian. Should have Brian call in. Maybe he was talking a little bit about this Monday. I don't even want to touch it. And how this is going to, can we find a good solution for this issue? Anybody? Yeah, I don't think anybody does. I haven't heard one good potential solution without drastic changes to our entire economic structure, whether that involves maybe reducing work hours or it would have to get rid of a lot of maybe would we have it would have to be something done with maybe with our foreign, we would have to change our manufacturing. I mean, there are so many issues that this would do. I don't know how this would send shockwaves through our economy. I guess somebody help me out here. Maybe me and Brian can talk about this Monday. But this is another big hot issue that we're going to be dealing with for the next few months. What do we do? Did somebody post an article about this? I'm going to have to take a look at it, perhaps. No, we got a shrinking workforce. And then, of course, you're rewarding people that have come into the country illegally, and you got a big mess over there, too, so you can't send them back into that hellhole. I don't know. It's horrible, and I don't know what else to say about it right now, and I'm just grinding my wheels. And you know what? I am just going to shut this. I am going to get rid of this. I'm stopping the dialogue on this, because I got nothing else to say on that, unless somebody wants to chime in on that, because nobody has any answers. We should, not even Larry. Larry's not even prompting on this one, and what should be done. All right. Moving on, let's get to some other stuff here. That issue's not going away anytime soon, so that'll give me more time to work on an overall solution for that. But anyway, moving on. FBI raids West Palm Beach office of doctor tied to U.S. Senator Bob Menendez. Here's a good scandal here. Yet the FBI is raiding the office of a South Florida eye doctor who last year was accused of providing prostitutes to longtime ally Senator Bob Menendez, a New Jersey Democrat. So we've got FBI agents late Tuesday night raided the West Palm Beach business of an eye doctor suspected of providing free trips and even underage Dominican Republic prostitutes to U.S. Senator Bob Menendez, Democrat of New Jersey, who has denied what he calls the, quote, fallacious allegations. Right, yeah. Let's see how that turns out there, Bob. So we've got agents gathered in the medical office complex of Dr. Solomon Melgen, a contributor to Menendez and other prominent politicians, to start hauling away potential evidence in several vans. The investigation is believed to be focusing on Melgen's finances and the allegations about Menendez's trips and contact with prostitutes. So, and this is interesting, this Melgen guy, who's has an outstanding IRS lien of $11.1 million for taxes owed from 2006 to 2009. This guy's an eye doctor. He's got to have some other stuff going on, running some businesses here. How do you have $11.1 million in back taxes for a four-year period? According to records, so I guess despite those financial problems, Melgen and his family have contributed at least $357,000 to candidates and committees since 1998, according to Florida and federal campaign records. Yeah, it looks like if you're trying to get out of an $11.1 million for taxes owed, maybe, I'm not saying this is wrong, it's an interesting strategy just to try to buy off politicians that maybe could cut you a deal somewhere behind the scenes. So maybe that's what's going on. I don't know. But so Melgen owes a Challenger plane, and Menendez has flown on the plane at least once, going back and forth for some fun little wild, crazy sex parties. And I'm going to segue that into the, let's see here, a Daily Caller says, so this Bob Menendez guy, who has allegedly procured prostitutes, some of them as young as 16 years old, during trips to the Dominican Republic. Now, technically, I guess it might be legal there, but it does not mean that it's okay. There are special laws on our books that say that that's not. Let's see if I can find that. But let's see. Where else? Let me find some more highlights of this. So the Daily Caller first reported in November that two prostitutes had accused Menendez of paying them for sex during Easter weekend 2012 at a posh Dominican resort. Prostitution is legal, but viewed unfavorably by U.S. voters. The women appeared in videotaped interviews, and here's the other funny little part. I don't want to say it's funny, but I guess it's funny just because you got another crook, scumbag politician. Supposedly, we're not through the investigation yet here, but here's another highlight. Is that each of these prostitutes that were interviewed said they were promised $500 to sleep with this slimeball lawmaker, but were ultimately paid only $100. So he stiffed them on top of it. Mr. Washington and all his money and all his big donations from his corrupt tax-cheating eye doctor in Florida, his little friend, and they're even stiffing the hookers on top of that. So additional confirmation came from a Dominican government official who told the D.C. that Menendez frequents sex, hookers, and drinking parties in the Caribbean nation. So looks like he had quite a bit of fun. I'm sure he's got some interesting memories and some good stories. But I don't think this is the kind of guy that should be high-ranking committee member in Congress, I guess. But whatever. Yes, Menendez broke Senate Ethics Committee rules. Like there's any ethics rules. All right, but anyway, without, let's see here. By accepting free travel for sex parties without seeking the committee's approval or disclosing the value of the perks. All right, that's enough on that. I think there's also another something I'll tweet out a little bit later on that. I think Jay Leno had it. Yeah, that's what it was. It was a Jay Leno joke on the Menendez prostitute story. And I guess one of the few people in the media that's actually covered it, which is interesting. The FBI says Menendez agreed to pay the prostitutes $500, but then only gave them $100. So he had sex like a Democrat, but as a fiscal conservative like Republicans. That's what we need in Washington. We need more men like that. Yeah, a little different when they're spending their own money, huh? That's Jay Leno. Well, maybe I'll tweet that out and we'll see. All right, moving on. Oh, and I want to jump to Larry. Maybe I can get, because I really had nothing to say on the immigration issue. I really want to talk about it. I just don't have any solutions within the current framework of our system. That's what I meant to say. Let's see if Larry has a solution for that, because I don't know much about this immigration issue. Larry, what's going on, brother? If I have to put you on the spot for immigration, you don't have to.
Oh, that's okay, but I'm not politically correct on this one, and I've told you before about
all right.
It.
No, that's all good. We're looking for outside-the-box solution, because I don't think obviously it's not going to work within the current framework. So.
Yeah, well, actually, I have a solution for the whole damn kit and caboodle.
First of all,
you get rid of NAFTA, CAFTA, GATT, Codex Alimentarius, and all that crap. You kick the UN out of the United States. Take over the building. I don't care if Rockefeller donated or not. He needs to go to jail anyway.
Right.
Bring our boys home out of Afghanistan, Iraq. Forget Iran. Iran should not be invaded. Having weapons-grade nuclear material is not on their list because they have only facilities to make medical-grade uranium. Take the military, put them on both northern and southern borders, shut the borders down. Kick out not just the Mexicans and send them back home, but you send back the Japanese mafia. You send back the Chinese Tong mafia. You send back the Russian mafia. And to where they came from, be fair about it. You know, everybody
all right.
has to go home, not just the Mexicans, okay? Somalis, Ethiopians, all of them go home. And with NAFTA being ended, you raise tariffs and say, you want your products here from a foreign country, you're going to pay us tariffs, just like the old days. And you will see this country prosper. You get rid of the Federal Reserve. You get rid of the IRS. You make it illegal to make unconstitutional law. Everything put on the books as far as anti-gun that's ever been written, nullified immediately. You know, every constitutional amendment ever made after the 12th Amendment, nullified immediately and restore it. The original Constitution, including the original 13th Amendment, that says no person shall hold any title of royalty. And that includes the title Esquire, which lawyers have. Okay? And that's a good start, you know?
Yeah, no, it probably will take something drastic to change it. I don't know how they think they're going to get or do this or pull this off.
Yes.
And work it
yeah,
out.
No
maybe
more,
I'm thinking,
yeah.
here's an idea. How about we take all, we'd have to change the monetary system, the work system. We'd have to crank up the factories or something. I don't know where we're going to get all these jobs.
With NAFTA, okay, being gone, they have to bring the factories back here. Because no longer could they produce stuff cheap and bring it back here and sell it cheap. Okay, which
good
really
point,
they don't. You're really not saving money by buying foreign goods anymore because it's just as expensive as an American-made good, and the American-made goods are just as good, if not better. So what's the point? And if you get rid of this law of admiralty crap in the courts and put these judges in jail that enforce it, you'd have constitutional common law real quick. Go ahead and say your piece, because I'm going to have to look at this chicken coop. Oh, they're giving me the wave.
Okay,
yeah, cool.
I was going to say, end the drug war. That way, maybe we could stop the corruption in Mexico, because they have a ton of resources. They got no reason to have people coming up here for work, because they should have plenty of stuff to do, but they got so much corruption. And if they're going to stay up here and they want citizenship, maybe they should make them work like 5 years as like crappy jobs or something. They're smart and they test well. I don't know.
No,
is that a path
to
citizenship? 5 years of work?
No. You send them back. Give them a gun, not before, but after they get to the border, you hand them a gun and tell them, go take your country back. Go kill the drug dealers yourself. Don't send U.S. soldiers down there. You send pissed off Mexicans down there, okay? Tell them to grow a spine and take their country back. And you don't give them, high dollar guns. Give them cheap crap, but something that'll shoot a bullet. But, send them back.
Yeah, give them some little M1 Garands or something. Or was it Garand?
No. M1 Garand, my ass. Keep those here. Those are fine weapons. What are you, nuts?
Well, they're older World War
II
weapons.
No, you see, you're missing the point. M1 Garand's 30-06. It's far superior to the M16. You can't carry it. You're a wimp, as far as I'm concerned. That's another thing. America needs to toughen up and become men again. Too many metrosexual wimpy little guys that, I can't carry it, it's too heavy. Oh, get the hell out of the military then. What the heck? You have to carry a weapon made out of plastic and aluminum? Be a man. Get a spine. Grow a pair. Work out.
Right.
Stop being a metrosexual and quit eating the soybeans and all this other crap. But anyway, you put it back to the days of when men were men, and, if you weren't a man, get the hell out of the way. Plain and simple. No more of this being, let's forgive and forget. No, forgive, but you don't forget. You send them back where they came from, period. I don't care if they're Chinese, Russian, Ethiopian, Guatemalan, Mexican. Send them all back. Take back your country, man. Period. Take it back.
I agree. They're stuck.
And no more of these wars, drug wars, poverty wars. No wars. Cancer war, war on cancer. No more czars. This isn't the 1800s Russia. We don't have czars. We don't have kings. We don't have nobles. We have people that are supposed to be our representative in Washington District of Crooks screwing us over, committing treason, and taking bribes and money, from the banksters from Europe and these family dynasties. And that's a crime. But the problem is, they control the law, so they don't go to jail. But, once again, I'm sorry, I'm kind of steamrolling you there, my friend.
No,
that's
good. No, that's good points, Larry. No,
by the way,
hi,
Brian, and thanks for playing my commercial, by the way.
Anytime.
I sucked. First part of the show, after Renee, did her news and I came on, I kind of sucked, man. I tell you what, I had a bad night last night getting the hang of it. Finally,
it's
I kind
all
of
good,
got
Larry.
Towards
I've,
the end.
I sucked on my immigration discussion, so I'm glad you called and gave me some better ideas here. Yes, eliminating the NAFTA and the GATT. But, yeah, there's a lot of solutions. So a lot of things have to be
NAFTA,
changed before they can do that.
Yeah, all of that. It's all anti-American. It's part of this UN, UNESCO. And you check out, investigate UNESCO. We're getting screwed here, man. If you look up Edward Bernays and Bertrand Russell and, all these other whack jobs and everything, Julian Huxley, who started UNESCO, just all this stuff, man, we've been screwed for over 150 years. And it's time for American people to wake the heck up, grow a pair, and be a man, stand up. I know women that are more of a man than some men I've met in life. There's a problem with that, okay? All right? Stop being a metrosexual. It's not cool. It's not hip. And women don't respect you being a metrosexual. Women deep down inside on the subconscious level want a man.
It's an interesting...
Friends of my daughters tell me this. Because Uncle Larry, they call me uncle. They're not really my niece or nothing.
Biological, yeah. Gotcha.
They're like, men our age aren't real men anymore. Men, the men that you're, you know, are real men are your age, and they're too old for it. You know,
it depends. I get, it can go both ways. Some people can get a little bit too, you know, on the other side, a little bit.
Well, I'm saying, on a subconscious level, women think different than what on a conscious level that they speak. They might, on a conscious level, want a man that's a metrosexual, but deep down inside,
the relationship
doesn't work because biologically they want a person that's a man, not some soybean-infested, poisoned little girly boy.
Yeah,
okay?
it's a good polarity. It's a good mix of feminine and masculinity.
Look at the end result, man. The relationships fail 99.99% of the time. Why? Because deep down inside, they don't respect that little metrosexual, dumbed-down, fluoridated, feminized, soybean-eating little girly boy. You know, and it's just the way it works, man. They want a man. And I'm not saying somebody's going to beat him, but somebody that actually is going to go out there and do the man's role of working his butt off and not sitting there doing the dishes every night and going, yes, dear, would you like me to do anything else for you, dear? No, be a man. Gross, pair. But anyway,
all right, good
that's
enough,
my
Larry.
Rant for today. God
Thanks,
bless
Larry.
Y'all. Listen to our show on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And
excellent. The late night
face.
Show. All right, man. Take care,
right.
man. Appreciate it.
Later, man. Bye, Brian.
Right, bye.
Bye, Blake. Bye.
Bye. All right. And there goes Larry to save me from drowning in my little immigration rant that I messed up. That's all good. So, yeah. Anyway, I guess it's a longer, bigger issue, and there's going to have to be a lot of drastic changes before something like this can be done. So good points by Larry. All right, and I better take a couple minutes here for a break. I'll be back on the other side with the news blitz extravaganza, I guess, if you will, to wrap up the rest of the stories today. And, I'll be back on the other side. And, stick around.
Thank you for tuning in to Freedomizer Radio, where we have a 24/7 chat room where you can come and share what's going on in the world with people of like mind. Anything and everything against the New World Order. Dial 347-324-3704 to catch our live show. Beginning at 9 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, Monday through Friday till midnight, and 9 to 9 on Saturday and Sunday. Take us to the beach. Take us to the park. Take us on a walk with the dog. Only on Freedomizer Radio.
How do you wake up in the morning? Do you jump out of bed with a smile? Or do you hit the snooze button over and over again? Tune in each Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time to Wake Up and Live. I'm your host, Christine Siegel. On my show, you will learn valuable health and wellness tips that will boost your energy levels. Are you eating a sad diet? Learn how to find quality, nutrient-dense foods. Life is what you make of it. Only you can change your life. You are that important. Join me, Christine Siegel, on Wake Up and Live here on Freedomizer Radio.
Hi, this is Mary Lou Van Houten, co-host and producer of Gets and Rising on FreedomizerRadio.com. Join host Libby Gadsden and me every Monday through Thursday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk with cutting-edge guests about the truth of a variety of topics. We are 100% free speech. Gadsden Rising on Freedomizer Radio, because you can handle the truth.
Rob Nellen Live is a show exposing the fallacy of the right-left paradigm while promoting liberty and freedom. A plethora of guests will challenge the establishment, mainstream media, the New World Order, and hopefully you. Listen to Rob Nellen Live Sundays between 3 and 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on the Freedomizer Radio Network.
Max Casey, right here on the Black Market Liberty Show, Wednesdays, 7 p.m. Central.
All right, back down the home stretch here, Blake the eccentric perspective on Freedomizer Radio, and I got about 19 minutes left in the broadcast. All right, so where to begin on the big news blitz? Sorry here. Let's move around the Drudge Report. First of all, CBS St. Louis High School to collect students' hair for mandatory drug testing. All right. That's going to force everybody to, I don't know. This seems like quite the overreach. I don't think that's going to work out too well in St. Louis. Are we going to... I don't know. It's not a Mormon school. We'll see. Insane. All right, there's just weird things going on in school. So they're just going to force everybody. They're taking hair tests. Give me a break. All right, what else do we got? 15-year-old girl shot and killed in Kenwood Neighborhood Park. This is in Chicago. We go from St. Louis to Chicago. And the significance of this is that there's actually some conspiracy theories on this, because this girl was at the performed at President Obama's inaugural, and she was gunned down in a part of a neighborhood that wasn't that was actually a nice, safe neighborhood. They're just hanging out at a park, and who's this girl's name? Hadia Pendleton. They were just hanging out in the park out of the rain, and then some lone gunman just came out of nowhere and started firing at this group of kids, shooting one, and not in a regular bad neighborhood. Let me see if I can find, I think I saw, yep, we can go to the beforeitsnews.com, which says, yes, the girl had performed at Obama's inauguration ceremony. So, yes, there's conspiracy theories coming up, because that's kind of a strange thing. So did something happen? So here's the rumor. This is definitely a rumor. I'm not saying anything more than that, because you can't verify it. But because of the coincidences, so could this girl have gotten herself involved in some kind of affair with Obama during the time she was with the inauguration performers? Could she have been bragging to her friends about it, and somehow the Secret Service got word of it, so they had to eliminate her to avoid another Clinton scandal? Worse than Clinton, because she's a minor. For this reason, they felt they had to murder her so she would not expose the truth that she was probably getting ready to do. Now, these are all question marks. It's from Before It's News. We're just bringing up questions, because obviously you put that stuff together, and it's a very strange coincidence that this went down. But nobody's confirming anything as of now. I will just post this on the board and move on. So, what else do I have here? Of course, Chicago murders top Afghanistan death toll. We've got 10 years in Chicago. They've had almost 5,000 murders as opposed to Afghanistan in that same time period, including even, suicides and stuff like that. Less than half. There's about 2,166. That's the total deaths in Afghanistan in that same 10 years. So Chicagoland, over twice as dangerous as Afghanistan. And yet they have the strictest gun laws in the country. All right, so what else do we have? We got another 5-year-old threatened with suspension for making a gun out of Legos. So we've had the bubble gun. We've had the paper gun. What else? Then we have the little boy in Baltimore that was using his fingers as a gun. Now we've got another 5-year-old with making a gun out of Legos. And I guess I could post this on the board so you can see it's not like an elaborate, like, Lego. You took a bunch of Legos and it makes it look like a gun. I mean, it's like multicolored. It doesn't even look like anything like a gun. And yet we're going to shake down another five-year-old like they have any concept of what they're doing. All right. Just, I don't know when the insanity ends here. I don't know. I guess maybe they're a future terrorist and they need to be put on a list. So put them on a terror watch list. All right. Hey, Red Pill. I've seen you in a bit. Good to see you, everybody. All right. Let's see. Moving on. What else do we get? More highlights here. 14 minutes left. China's filthy air prompts mask rush and sale of fresh air in cans. Of course, that brings up memories of an old classic movie, Spaceballs. Rick Moranis and Mel Brooks. And yes, I remember they had that problem with the bad air, so they had to buy air in cans. And how ironic. And I actually saw a segment of this on The Daily Show. I don't know if it was Monday or last week when they showed the air in China. And it's absolutely thick. It is disgusting, their air over there. I don't blame them. I mean, they've got to be just killing the people over there with this nasty air. And, of course, they kind of – isn't that what they kind of use to say how bad coal plants are? But then here in the States, it goes through a million different filtration processes, and it's actually a clean energy of sorts. But anyway, that's a larger issue that I'm not going to get into right now. What else do we got? I don't have Nemo in the studio anymore because this is – I was going to ask him about this. Baltimore – did Ray Lewis, this is ridiculous, and and this has been going on all over the sports world, like this huge scandal, because I got nothing better to talk about, and that's, did Ray Lewis use banned deer antler spray to return from triceps injury? So, and I saw this, I was in work at a bar, and the ESPN was on, of course, and I didn't have the volume on, but it's nonstop, just that ticker constantly over this huge Ray Lewis scandal using banned deer antler spray to return from triceps injury. All right, so anyway, I don't even know what to say about this. So according to this, there's some little I guess there's these deer antlers are like the fastest growing substance on Earth, biological substance on Earth, these New Zealand deer, and it's some kind of chemical called IGF-1, and I guess it's similar to human growth hormone. And I guess he was using this substance. Apparently it was banned. I don't really see here a huge issue. I think this is really ridiculous. Not that I'm an expert on steroids or anything like that. I usually don't cover a whole lot of sports. I'm a big fan of kind of looking forward to this game. I'm a Ray Lewis fan of sorts. I guess I was going to talk to Nemo about this. I guess I'm kind of looking forward to the Super Bowl. Football is pretty much like the last thing I've got left. I've pretty much given up on the rest of the sports. I think there are a lot of them are a waste of time. But at least football, you know, it's just down to like, it's like a once-a-week thing. So it's kind of okay in a way. And I'm kind of looking forward to this game. I'm a big football fan of sorts, even though I don't get into it like I used to and follow it religiously and play the fantasy football. I think that's been a waste of time and kind of silly. But, I'm a big fan of both teams, and I love nothing better than a good fiery middle linebacker. I'm all a defensive-minded guy. So I hope this doesn't affect Ray Lewis. And I guess that would be my Super Bowl prediction for this year. I'm kind of pulling for I'm hoping to see a nice, good game and just to get rid of these stupid scandals. Ray Lewis is going to retire, from what I know, so just leave the guy alone. He's got one more game to play. It's kind of a great story that he was able to come back here and get to play in the Super Bowl at the very end of the year. And I like both teams. I like the way they play defense and such. And I'm kind of hoping to see that really great game and to see the Ray Lewis pass the torch to his number 52, Patrick Willis, on the other side, and then walk away from the game with his head held high. But no, the media is coming crashing down on him over some deer antler spray. Give us a break. All right, moving on. What else do I've got here? More heads rolling at CNN. Apparently Soledad O'Brien is out. And they're going to make a new morning show with Aaron Burnett. I don't know. So, yeah, interesting to see how the house cleaning to try to resuscitate CNN as they're dying on the table right now. All right, anyway, moving on. I haven't even get to some other stuff here. All right. What else do we got? Let's see. Sheriff Joe Arpaio. I'm looking at the comments on the board here. Talking about, yes, he's not going to disarm anybody. Let's see here. Oh, I like to see that. And that actually dovetails with the interesting story I found also out of Before It's News. Says 200-plus sheriffs have already said no to Obama's new gun laws. So that's awesome news. That's 200-plus. So just the numbers keep growing. They know the reality here. They're not going to be able to pass these stupid gun laws. I just talked about Chicago. Yes, the only people that are calling for these crazy gun laws are pundits and bureaucrats, politicians, basically. So at least the police chiefs and the sheriffs are doing the right thing, so that's awesome news. And, of course, like I was saying earlier, a couple weeks, hopefully we'll see some developments with the Sheriff Arpaio birth certificate, identity crisis, Supreme Court, February 15th, Orly Tates, I think is her name. So we'll see how that goes as well. All right, what else do I got here with the last 7 minutes I have in the broadcast? That would be, so I'm trying to pick my battles. I got a bunch of goofball stories I picked up off of FARC. I don't know if I'm going to have time to get into that stuff. Let's go to InfoWars. I have not touched InfoWars. Actually, they have a story about the 5-year-old facing the suspension after building the Lego gun. Steve Watson. I'll probably tweet that one out. Here we've got TSA protester with Fourth Amendment written on chest. Wins trial over airport arrest. There was a guy who wrote the Fourth Amendment out on his chest. Went through the TSA, refused the scanner. They gave him the pat down, and he took off his shirt. And and they detained him because he wrote the Fourth Amendment on his chest. But yes, he got out of it. Wow, they tried to They put out a civil rights lawsuit against a host of defendants seeking $250,000 in damages. Anyway, I don't know, but no one's getting in trouble. Anyway, moving on here, what else do I have? Oh, yeah, speaking of deer antlers, here's an interesting story from Mike Adams, InfoWars. Police state gone wild. Couple facing a 60 days in jail for rescuing injured baby deer. Imagine this. So an Indiana couple saved a wounded baby deer and nursed it back to life, saving its life and giving it a home. They named it Little Orphan Danny. And when Indiana state officials got word of this courageous act of compassion, they ordered the deer euthanized. Could you imagine? I don't know the whole, you know, backstory to this, but imagine maybe you're traveling somewhere and maybe you notice a little baby deer hobbling around and you rescue it and you take it home with you, nurse it back to health, and somehow the Indiana state officials got word of this. I don't know, maybe they made a YouTube video showing their new little pet baby deer, and the Indiana state officials got word of it and said, "You're going to kill it." All right? So when the deer escaped right before it was scheduled to be killed, well, obviously the couple let it go. I mean, what else are you going to do? I mean, this isn't like frickin', you know, E.T. or something. I mean, it's a baby deer, for God's sakes. So, it happened to escape. And, yes, I think the man and woman were charged with, quote, with unlawful possession of a deer. Imagine going to court, being tried for unlawful possession of a deer, and you're going to face 2,000 in fines and 60 days in jail. So I guess maybe maybe they should have just taken the wounded deer and put it on the road and ran it over. I guess that would have been the proper procedure. I don't really know. I mean, it's not like a wild coyote or something, or something they were feeding wild, dangerous animals. I mean, it's a frickin' deer, for God's sakes. But, yeah, there's the insanity. What else do I got? Yes, householder may near deal on Fast and Furious contempt. This is out of Politico. I guess I was going to cover that earlier, dovetail that, but I forgot. Shame on me. All right, so, I'm kind of curious why this guy's still, like, running around. He's supposed to enforce all these new gun laws, and yet he's been guilty of contempt. Quite outrageous. So I don't have a lot of time to get into this. But anyway, so hopefully the slowly grinding wheels of justice are still moving, and I don't know when they're going to finally do something. How do you get held on contempt? I mean, can you do something like that? I mean, has anyone like gone to gone to work? Like back to work, and maybe your coworkers said, "Hey, Bob, didn't you weren't you found guilty of contempt over the weekend? And what are you, like, doing here?" I don't know, but apparently if you're above the law, I guess you can just go on business as usual. All right, so moving on. What else do I have? Yeah, a bunch of goofy FARC articles, which I won't touch for now. That's about it. Not a lot. All right, anyway, I guess if I found any loose ends, I will tie them up tomorrow and also check out my Twitter feed. That's at Eccentric99, and I will tweet out some of these stories I missed or some of the other stuff I did cover. And that's about all I have for today, so thank you all for listening, and I'll be back tomorrow, same time, same channel. And stick around for Gadsden Rising coming up soon. They're going to have Ryan Treat on today, active duty veteran currently in Korea who's done two tours in Iraq. He worked for Ron Paul in Iowa. So that's coming up in about a minute. So thank you all again, and I'll be back, like I said, tomorrow. I'm out. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month.
remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance, available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Hey guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called Solavay. And Solavay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer for as long as they have Solavay, not just for the first month, but for the whole time that person has Solavay. You sign up enough people, and Solavay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to Solavay.com/freedomizer. That's Solavay, Solavei.com/freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, and another kicker, if you sign up three people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, Solavay.com/freedomizer.
We are so pleased to announce ESP Botanicals is now sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. They have a bath and body line of products made for keeping your skin beautiful and healthy, but it's also for psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, and dermatitis treatment. They are meticulously prepared skincare products made from the best botanicals available. Committed to buying only from the growers when they can and using the highest quality cold-pressed oils, botanical organic additives, the best steam-expressed essential oils, and the least processed carrier oils that are available in today's marketplace. Pamper yourself or someone special in your life. Give the gift of beautiful, glowing skin. ESPBotanicals.com. Thank you so much for supporting us at Freedomizer Radio.
Oh, yeah, baby. You know what time it is? It's time to get your freak on with your host, Max Casey, right here on the Black Market Liberty Show, Wednesdays, 7 p.m. Central.
Oh, you want to heal the world? Oh, you can't do that. You know, you got to elect the right people. No, change your thinking. Change the way you feel. Change the way you do things. Do everything for peace. Like John Lennon said, walk for peace. You take a shower for peace. Do whatever you do for peace.
Every time you do that, you set a ripple effect out.
Because we live in a vibrational world, and your brain is the instrument. To learn how to direct and control your mind, you guys are superheroes. You know, they don't want you to know that, but you are. You guys are the most powerful people in the world.
We see the power in you to change your thinking. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, only on Freedomizer Radio.
We are Critical Immunity with Larry and Renee. Our show will cover current events, national health news, nutrition, emergency preparedness, and organic farming, and various implements and tools to thrive and survive. We hope you tune in and join in our discussion of health, liberty, preparedness, and survival. Join our hosts, Larry and Renee, with guest callers always welcome.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
Hi, Libby.
Well, hello, Mary Lou, and welcome to Gadsden Rising. And this is Libby Gadsden, and Mary Lou Van Houten is our co-host and producer. And our special guest today is Ryan Treat. Welcome to the program, Ryan.
Hey, how you doing, Libby and Mary Lou?
Oh, hey. All right. And I want to thank Ryan for getting up at 6 a.m. to talk to us. He's calling us from South Korea.
I thought you were calling from. Wow.
Yeah. So we really value your time, regardless of what time you're calling in, Ryan. Are you still working for the Army? Are you there? Tell us about South Korea and how you can't be there.
Well, yeah, I'm still I'm active duty. I've been in the Army for a little over 10 years. And so Korea is just a regular, pretty much a regular tour that people that you go on. You know, you come down on orders. You don't have much of a choice. And they're one-year-long tours. And if you're not married, you can stay longer if you want, but they only make you stay for 1 year.
Okay.
So I've been here about six. I've been here about 6 months, and I like it here. The food's great. I've been, you know, ability. One nice thing about the Army is you get to go around the world and live in different cultures and stuff like that. So.
Yeah.
I'm a food guy. I love food, so I love eating the Korean food.
Mm.
I've heard it's fabulous. My girlfriend's on Facebook, and she constantly posts pictures of food. And of course, you can go to all the countries around there, too. She goes to China all the time and Japan. And, you know, so because you're pretty central. I don't know if you travel much, but do you get to do any tours of any other countries around you?
I haven't been yet, but they do have tours set up where you can go, like, see the Great Wall. You can go to Japan. I have a friend that works for the Stars and Stripes in Tokyo, and I've been planning on taking a 4-day trip out there to see Japan. She came here for a 4-day weekend, and we went to Seoul and went up to Seoul Tower and did some sightseeing around the city. So.
Yeah, it's an amazing place. I saw photos of it. It just seems like there's life exists on the 50th floor or something. It's just so many skyscrapers.
Yeah, well, you know, Seoul is like the third largest or most populated city in the world. People, especially Americans, I think a lot of times think the only place where civilization is like in New York, L.A., and London. But it's just not so. Seoul's an extremely pretty city. Everything's lit up. It's like stereotypical what you think of, you know, an Asian city. It's like just neon lights everywhere and large skyscrapers, and it's a clean, nice, you know, relatively low crime, huge city.
Yeah, that's what I noticed, and she seems to love it. And every photo she posts, it seems like she's on, you know, in someplace between the 30th and the 50th floor, some amazing new skyscraper and having these panoramic views of just incredible architecture. And I know a little bit about it just through Facebook. So I'm glad you're enjoying it. Mary Lou tells me that you discovered Ron Paul. Can you want to tell us about your story about how you discovered Ron Paul?
Sure. Well, I grew up, I've always been politically not active, but, like, you know, politically aware. And by politically aware, I mean I listen to, you know, Sean Hannity just 3 hours a day is all he asked. I grew up in a essentially Republican house in Florida. And, you know, Reagan, Bush, you know, Bush 2. And I really did. I'm not kidding. I really did watch Fox News and listen to Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly driving to and from work every day. I thought I was politically aware. And, you know, I guess it turns out I actually was, because I, during the 2007 Republican primaries, decided that if McCain won the primary, I wasn't going to vote for McCain, because I paid close enough attention that I knew that he wasn't conservative. You know, he wasn't for lower taxes. He was not, you know, he co-sponsored No Child Left Behind. He co-sponsored Medicare Part D. I knew that he was a big spending, reaching across the aisle kind of Republican. And, you know, at the time, I considered reaching across the aisle a bad thing. And so I just knew that he wasn't the kind of person that I wanted to support. Well, sure enough, he won. And another reason why I knew he was bad was because all of the people that I listened to were bad mouthing him. Nobody liked McCain. You know, Antoine Hannity didn't like McCain. Nobody on Fox News liked McCain. They all called him a liberal. They hated him. They all talked him down. And then when he won the primary, the next day, these same people who had been talking bad about him for 8 years suddenly told me, this is our conservative champion, and you got to line up behind this guy and support him. And I was like, come on, like, I'm not stupid. I remember you just yesterday talking bad about him. So I kind of had, like, a, you know, a, a moment where I was really very confused. And then, you know, like I said, of course, he won the primary, and I knew I wasn't going to go vote for Obama, so I just kind of entered a time of apathy, you know, like a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't vote in 08. I didn't support anybody. I didn't vote in 08. And after the 2008 elections, I was at a bookstore, and I just stumbled across Ron Paul's book, The Revolution. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever read it, if you open it up, the very first chapter, the very first word says, "This much is for sure, you've been lied to."
Mm.
And I was like, "Oh, this is interesting." And he says, "You know, every 4 years, the Democrats, they send out this guy, and he promises change, and he promises, you know, that they're going to make this big agenda, and they're going to lower taxes, and they pretend to be for small government, and they get elected, and nothing happens." And then the Democrats, every 4 years, they send out their guy, and he promises, you know, to help the poor and to end the wars and protect civil liberties. And they get elected, and nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, this is the absolute truth. So, you know, he had me in the first three paragraphs. I finished the book that night, and then I read it again the next day, and I've pretty much been on board ever since.
Wow.
It was pretty much just like that.
Wow, that's great.
That is, yeah. So, and then did you go on to read his other books, like End the Fed?
Well, yeah, I was actually in Korea at that time as well. So I was stuck. I was working a job where I didn't have a lot of opportunity to get out and do anything. I was working real long hours. So I spent most of that year in Korea on the Internet, you know, watching Ron Paul YouTube videos. I mean, isn't that where everybody learns about Ron Paul is on YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
I was watching Ron Paul YouTube videos.
I have my own story, but yeah, go ahead.
You know, things like Freedom to Fascism. The Money Masters. You know, I just dug down into the whole Federal Reserve, banking cartel type of information. You know, like fiat money, sound money. Non-interventionism, like, this is all stuff I'd never heard before, you know, so I had a lot to learn, a lot of catching up to do. Tom Woods videos, I love economics. I learned everything I know about economics from watching Tom Woods and Bob Murphy on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much it. I just kind of buried myself. And even now, it's still my hobby. I mean, that's what I do. Every day after work, I come home and look and see if Tom Woods has uploaded a new video of him making a lecture. I got rid of my television. I haven't had cable TV in 4 years. So
wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I read In the Fed. I read Liberty Defined by Ron Paul. I ordered his older book, which is a Foreign Policy of Freedom, and it's a collection of his lectures that he's made on the House floor over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, I mean, you know, there's so much to learn. And when you start from scratch, you could spend a lot of time doing it. And I have.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you find working in the campaign? I know that you worked in the Ron Paul campaign for a while.
It's kind of an interesting story. I met a girl named Leah Farrow because I was looking to get a tattoo. Leah's a tattoo artist, and we started talking on Facebook about getting a tattoo. I was living in Georgia at the time, and she lived in Alabama. So she offered me a deal. She would design one for me, and I would, you know, and for free, and I would, you know, pay her by the hour to do it, which I guess is pretty standard for tattoo artists. And we got to talking about Ron Paul and, you know, the Liberty Movement and stuff like that. And she says, "Well, I know I have a friend." It turns out Leah was a member of LOLA, which is the Ladies of Liberty Alliance. Mm-hmm. And she says, "I have a friend who works on the campaign." She says, I'll call her, or I'll put you in touch with her and see if you can volunteer and help work for her. So she hooked me up with Allison Gibb. So I call, you know, I talk to Allison. Allison says, this was right before the Southern Republican Leadership Conference in Louisiana last year. And Allison says, yeah, we need volunteers to come work the Ron Paul booth at SRLC.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a week of leave, flew out to Louisiana, and I worked the Ron Paul booth at the SRLC. Met, at the time, the campaign was still relatively small. This was like June, so it was 1 month after he declared his candidacy. I met all the campaign there, the staff that was, and it's just like any other job. If you do good, they invite you back, right? So I worked hard, and, dressed appropriately, and did what they told me to do, and sure enough, when it came time for the big push for Ames in Iowa, Allison called me up and asked if I wanted to come out to Ames. Well, actually, they offered me a job. And I said, no, I can't work for you because I'm still in the Army. You know, I can't take the job. I was active duty, and they, the military tends to frown on political activism in general. They have a long list of things you can't do and a very small list of things you can do. So I said, no, I can't take a job, but I'll be glad to help keep volunteering. And, so she calls me up and says, hey, come out to Iowa and help us, with Ames. We need somebody, to do like veteran outreach. And I said, sure. So I took a whole month of leave and I went out to Iowa last summer or summer before last in 2011 and sold Ames tickets, went around and talked to VFWs and American Legions, in Iowa. And sold a lot of tickets. Funny thing about political campaigns is it's really nothing more than making phone calls. I probably made like 10,000 phone calls while I was in Iowa.
Mm.
Oh my God! So, wow.
Yeah, so we sold Ames tickets. We promoted Ames. We spent a month out there doing. I also worked on the advance team, which would go to different venues and set up the venues before Ron Paul got there to speak. So. It was really very cool. I worked a couple gun shows, tabling for Ron Paul in Iowa. Got to meet Dr. Paul a couple of times, but I think he meets so many people. He probably doesn't remember hardly anyone.
Involved. Yeah. And so how did you feel about the campaign support and being in the Republican Party, Ron?
Well, I'm not hitting any more a big fan of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
After after 2008, like I said, I didn't leave the Republican Party. I just kind of dropped out of the political, field altogether. But because Ron Paul conveniently just happened to be running as a Republican, I didn't have to change anything. I would have re-registered or whatever to be, to support him and to vote for him in the primary and in the general if I needed to as a Republican. This is kind of a contentious point in the Ron Paul following, whatever you want to call it, the Liberty Movement, because there's a lot of dislike for the GOP amongst people like Ron Paul, either because they never liked the GOP to begin with, or people that did like the GOP and saw the way they treated Dr. Paul and his supporters, they began to not like the GOP. I'm pretty much in the same position that I've always been in. Like, I don't really like them. I see the GOP for what it is. It's a second head of a one party system. They really don't differ from the Democrats that much on anything of substance. Foreign policy, monetary policy, spending, huge government programs. Everybody pretends like the only Democrats are for big government programs, but the Republicans are too. I mean, we passed Medicare Part D and No Child Left Behind with the Republican Senate, House, and President. So the facts just don't bear out. But how do I feel about the Republican Party right now? I feel like this guy, Ron Paul, who we all look up to, because he taught us so much. I feel like he's made it pretty clear that he thinks the best way to make a political solution to the problems that we have are to work through the Republican Party. Now, Ron Paul ran as a you know, he ran as a libertarian, so he ran third party. He's familiar with that, that avenue, and he thinks that it's not practical. He apparently either thinks that the Republican Party has a legitimate chance of being changed from the inside, or maybe he just thinks that's the best chance that we have. So I have made the decision that I'm going to give it 4 more years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try it his way. You know, like I feel like I owe it to him because he hasn't personally done a lot for me, but I feel like I owe him a lot because everything that I know about, you know, the internal workings of government and stuff that I've learned about individual liberty and the rights of man and free market economics, I never would have taken the time to learn all this stuff if I hadn't been turned on to it by Ron Paul. And he spent, you know, 30 years in Washington, D.C., working his place where, you know, amongst the filth and the slime. And when he really, really would have rather been in a small town working as, you know, as an obstetrician, he made that sacrifice for us. So I figure if he's saying, I think you guys should try to work within the Republican Party, I'm willing to sacrifice, you know, which is really no sacrifice at all other than being surrounded by, you know, hypocrites and slime and filth and the GOP. I'm willing to do that, you know, for 4 years and see if we can do something. After maybe, you know, 4 years from now, I might have to take a opportunity to reflect and see if I just want to just continue with political activism, you know, or maybe take a different approach.
Mm-hmm.
What would
Ryan,
you consider? Go ahead, Mary Lou.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt y'all, but Ryan, you made me think of something. Speaking of sacrifice, did y'all know that Ron Paul and his wife Carol did not even live together in Washington? She was still in Texas and that he commuted back and forth. That really blows my mind. I think that's a huge sacrifice. Did y'all know that?
Well, I did, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I
don't think I knew that until, you know, fairly recently.
I don't think he even ever made that from D.C. I think I'm pretty sure.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Well, he doesn't take any kind of perks that you get, because I think what you're getting at, Mary Lou, is that he would have had a lot more perks if he had moved Mrs. Paul into the Washington, D.C. area. They could have taken advantage of a lot of economic perks by the government. Is that right?
I just thought the fact that they weren't living together 7 days a week, I just thought that was a huge sacrifice that he was commuting back and forth.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Yeah, well, he stayed in his region. He stayed true to his location.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't become a D.C. politician like many of the rest. So, but what do you think right now is, Ryan, since you feel like maybe politics wouldn't be the answer, how do you feel about anarchy, for example?
Well, I don't know, this is kind of another contentious subject, but It's also kind of funny because I'm a federal employee, so I understand a bit hypocritical on the subject, but, you know, when I first heard about it, I think I went to my first Ron Paul meetup in 2009, maybe, and there was a guy there by the name of Jim Hanks. Some of you guys might know him. He lives in South Carolina. And Jim says, I'm an anarchist. And I said, you're a what? And, you know, I mean, initially I thought it, you know, I thought it was crazy, right? Because nobody knows any anarchists. Anarchists wear black and throw and firebomb buildings. I mean, that's
right,
everybody.
Right.
Everybody knows an anarchist just, you know, one destruction of private property. And so over time I come to find out, sure enough, a lot of these people that I respected that I was just starting to find out about, like Tom Woods, for example, are anarchists. Lou Rockwell is an anarchist. And, I came to the conclusion that if you take libertarianism to its logical conclusion, there can't be a government. I mean, if you really believe in only voluntary interaction, if you really believe in no force, the only way you could have a government is if one was voluntary, and nobody's going to voluntarily support a government. Over time, on a long enough timeline, for example, if people had to quit paying property taxes and decide where they wanted to send their kids to school, who would voluntarily send their kid to a public school as opposed to a private school? Nobody. So on a long enough timeline, in a truly voluntary society, you would have no government. However, I kind of call myself like a philosophical anarchist, which is to say I recognize that if you ever were to have a truly force-free, voluntary society, it would have to be one without government.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
That's different from a practical, I think, anarchist who really I don't think anybody thinks we're going to have it in our lifetime. I don't know. I just don't see it as realistic or practical while I'm alive. So I don't put it out there and say, this is what I want, you know, like, because it's not realistic. But on a philosophical level, I do recognize the morality of anarchy as compared to even a constitutional government. So that's how I feel about it. I respect it a lot. I respect the position. I respect people who just refuse to participate. And that's another seems to be line in the that people are on either sides of in this falling. Some people have just decided I'm not going to participate in government at all. Even to the point that they don't pay their taxes. Even to the point that they, you know, don't pay any income tax. I know quite a few people who don't pay income taxes actually.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, I don't disrespect them. I appreciate the fact that they came out of the woodwork to support Ron Paul. You know, I have a friend named Justin that says Ron Paul created more anarchists than any anarchist ever did. So.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I had the same reaction you did when someone told me anarchy was the way now, and he was a Ron Paul campaigner as well. And I just was flattened. I just looked at him like, how could you say that? And it didn't take me very long to agree with him. I just thought it through a little bit. It took me a few weeks, and then I was, oh boy, he's right. So I understand completely where you're coming from. Yet it's a long road to haul from super hierarchical government that's very, very supersized to approaching anarchy. So I see anarchy as a sliding scale that we just have to keep cutting down the governmental beast because it's way too big right now.
You know, I kind of have this idea that, like, you know, human evolution, you know, 226 years ago, the founding fathers got together and they kind of came up with this great idea. They're like, let's have an experiment in limited government. So they put together this 3-page document and they said, this is going to be government. You know, this is it. This is what government can do, and everybody's going to be really free. And, you know, we're not going to have any more big banks, and we're not going to have more big wars, and you guys are all going to be able to go live your lives. And everybody's going to be great, right? We're going to have this tiny little government. And it was at the time, it was an experiment. And it was, you know, it was a result of, you know, the Enlightenment era where, you know, the natural rights of man were being discussed. And these guys, Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, had been reading about John, you know, reading John Locke, and they had these great ideas. And they were like, we're going to try this out. So, you know, it failed, right? Like Ron Paul said, the Constitution failed. Pretty much anybody everybody agrees with that. You know, Sanders Spooner said the Constitution failed 100 years ago. He said it had no authority at all. But so what I kind of think, like, maybe 100 years from now, a huge group of people will have the opportunity to get together and say, let's try a new experiment. Let's try an experiment without government and see what happens. And that's kind of the way I think that anarchy will probably come about. You know, as the evolution of man's understanding of what natural rights are and what is the best way to protect them. You know, the founding fathers, they thought the best way to protect them was with a limited government that was in place to protect your rights, but obviously they were wrong. So that's kind of my thoughts, you know, on the whole voluntarist. I like to use voluntarist movement. And if you say anarchy, it just throws people off. You got to say voluntarist.
It just blows up. It literally blows bombs up in their faces. That's all they see. So I agree with you. Voluntarism is, I guess, a more appropriate term to use with people because it doesn't create immediate images in their brain that, of course, have been propagandized by mass media. So I think you're correct in using the term voluntarism. What do you think about the media's portrayal of anarchy, Ryan?
Well, you know, they don't really, I mean, they don't really talk about it very much. I suspect that the people that are in the media that discuss anarchy don't even know what it is. Just like they don't know what non-intervention is, or, you know, a lot of, they don't know, they don't know a lot of stuff. They live in their own little bubbles as well. So,
yeah,
I mean, how do they portray anarchy? So they portray it as the way most people see it, as, like I said, men and women dressed up in black, you know, firebombing stuff, you know, taking over bank lobbies, whatever it is that anarchists do, I don't know.
Before we take a break, I just have to mention the Rocky and Bullwinkle show that I grew up with. I don't know if you ever saw that cartoon, but maybe you did, Mary Lou. Where they had Natasha, the black-haired vixen, and she was always carrying one of those round black bombs. And she had Boris, her partner in crime, and they were like anarchists on the Rocky and Bullwinkle show. Am I all alone here? Does anybody else remember that?
I remember the show, but I didn't watch it.
Okay. Well, maybe we have a caller out there who remembers it. But I kind of grew up with that show, and there were a lot of shows like that that just portrayed anarchists as always having a black band around their eyes and throwing some sort of a bomb through a window. And when the opposite is true, is the true story is that the state creates chaos and violence, and it's not anarchy. Anarchy is a completely peaceful way of life, which is what it has become, voluntarism. But we're going to have to take a break right now. This is Gadsden Rising. I'm Libby Gadsden. Our special guest today is Ryan Treat, and he's on active duty in South Korea. And thank you so much for calling us at this hour in South Korea. It's about 6:30 a.m. We appreciate it. And Mary Lou Van Houten is our co-host and producer. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait. There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
Hey, Freedomist, join me, Proof Negative. Weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together. Right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
Rob Nellen Live is a show exposing the fallacy of the right-left paradigm while promoting liberty and freedom. A plethora of guests will challenge the establishment, mainstream media, the New World Order, and hopefully you. Listen to Rob Nellen Live Sundays between 3 and 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on the Freedomizer Radio Network.
Hey, y'all, this is Ron with Ron's Media Maker. I would like to invite you to listen to my show every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And for our international listeners, that's 1,800 hours to 2,000 hours Greenwich Mean Time right here on Freedomizer Radio. Always interview a broad spectrum of guests ranging from entrepreneurs to the eclectic. I also like to keep you up to date on the latest breaking news in geopolitics, world events, astronomy, technology, science, and how it relates to the 21st century and an emerging global order. Be sure to visit our website at freedomizerradio.com, take part in our lively chat room, visit our sponsors, or read breaking news articles on our Twitter feed. You can also find out more about the wide variety of shows and hosts at freedomizerradio.com. If you'd like to comment or speak with a guest during the show, just give us a call at 347-324-3704.
You're listening to Freedomizer Radio at freedomizerradio.com. Join us in the chat room. You can also listen and participate by calling 347-324-3704. Like Freedomizer Radio on Facebook and follow Libby Gadsden on Facebook. We're back.
Well, thank you, Mary Lou, and this is Gadsden Rising. I'm Libby Gadsden. Our special guest today is Ryan Treat, and he's on active duty right now in South Korea with the American Army, and we thank him for being here with us. And Mary Lou Van Houten is our co-host and producer. And, Ryan, we wanted to touch base with you on your two tours of Iraq. You want to tell us about that a little bit?
Sure. I was in the Army on 9/11, so I had already joined. I joined in 2000, and I was stationed at Fort Bragg when 9/11 happened. I actually had surgery the day before, so I'm one of the few people who can't really remember the events of 9/11. I was in a drug-induced haze for most of the day. So because of the nature of Fort Bragg, basically when it became obvious that we were going to war, both in Afghanistan and Iraq, Iraq's a high deployment duty station, so we all knew it was only a matter of time until we went. I actually wound up going to Iraq in 2003. I was over there in April. We drove up from Kuwait. We flew into Kuwait and stayed in Kuwait for about a month, and then we drove up to Baghdad in late April, which was about 2 or 3 weeks after the initial ground invasion of Iraq. I lived in Sadr City, which is a little small suburb of Iraq. It's the Sunni area where Muqtada al-Sadr has a lot of support. If you guys remember him, I don't even know if he's in the news anymore. But
and now tell us about give us a brief idea who he is.
Oh, well, I don't know a whole lot. He's an imam. He's a religious leader of the Sunni sect. You know, there's Sunni and Shia Muslims, and he was a Sunni leader. You know, the Sunnis in Iraq were the minority, but they held all the power because Saddam was a Sunni.
Right.
So Sadr City was a very poor area of Baghdad, where it had a lot of Sunni concentration.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, when we first got there, it was not very dangerous or very violent at all. The hardest thing that we had was just the hardships of being in a military zone. Like, we didn't have any running water. We didn't have any electricity. We lived, you know, day to day in the heat. It was, you know, obviously May. In the desert, or not in the desert, but in Sadr City, it was very, very hot. We didn't have a lot of food. We didn't have a lot of water. So we went hungry, we went thirsty, and we went dirty because we didn't have any running water. We couldn't shower. So I always have a funny story to tell people, like, that are especially the germaphobes, that I went from May until October without taking a single shower.
So what do you think about the facilities that were provided to you by corporations like Halliburton?
Well, again, this was early on. There were no facilities. We took over a building that had been a cigarette factory, and we parked our equipment. I'm in communications, so we basically my job was to provide secure communications for the people, you know, the commanders on the ground, so that they can pick up the phone and call a commander at a different post somewhere in Iraq and talk to him, and also secure internet so they can send emails back and forth and, you know, trade whatever type of information they need to trade. So we went and set our equipment up in the little courtyard down outside this. It was a 6-story, basically, corporate building. These guys, it was a cigarette factory that had been shut down, I guess, by us, actually. And we took over, like, their little corporate headquarters. And in their offices, we set up our cots. And we lived in these, you know, places where cubicles had been set up earlier. But there was no... Where I was at, there was no Halliburton presence. There was no corporate presence. I mean, I understand it's way different than that now. I haven't been back since 2004.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there was no corporate presence. We, like I said, we lived day-to-day. We ate MREs for 6 months, which, if you know what an MRE is, it's a bag of food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A bag of pre-prepared food that you just heat up and eat. And at the beginning of each week, they'd give us a box of MREs and a case of water, and they'd say, well, this is your sustenance for the week. Make it last.
Hmm.
So now I did go to some places, like if you went to the airport, there, you know, there's a big base at the airport, obviously. They had huge dining facilities there and lots of stuff that was really nice, but that wasn't my experience. My experience was much more rugged than that.
Okay. And so... You were in Iraq between what year and what year, 2003 and then to 2005, is that correct?
Yeah, I did two tours essentially back-to-back. What happened was, well, again, like I said, when we first got there, there was no violence. The hard part of it was just the rugged nature of it. But then I remember that next year in early 2004, one day we woke up and basically the shit had hit the fan. Like we'd had people out, not just from my base, but all over Iraq, and suddenly we were getting attacked. Suddenly there was roadside bombs. Suddenly there was terrorist assaults or insurgents or, you know, whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, where is this coming from? And I guess people know where it's coming from, but you know it began getting violent, and we were caught totally off guard because, you know, we remembered Donald Rumsfeld saying this war is going to be a matter of weeks, not months, right?
Easy for him to say.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Thanks for reminding us, Ryan. I think people have lost track of that.
So we were all caught off guard. We weren't prepared for it at all. We spent most of our first 6 months there doing community work. We cleaned out garbage. You know, we took these landfills and put them in dump trucks and hauled it out of the city. And we would pay people to clean up their own front yards. And we gave them jobs, you know, on base. We bring these Iraqi civilians or Baghdad civilians, Iraqi civilians on base. And we'd give them jobs, you know, like cleaning, taking out the garbage. The barbers that we had there were Iraqis. We paid them, you know, however much we paid them, like $7 a month or something to come on base and work. We paid people literally to clean up their own front yards. We went to every house in Sadr City and said, we'll give you $10 a month if you clean all the garbage out of your yard. And we built soccer fields, we built playgrounds, we went and worked at the electrical facilities, the water facilities, and that's how we spent the first 6 months there. I remember we would go outside the walls and play with the kids. We built this huge playground and soccer field and set up an inner-city – this sounds silly, but we set up an inner-city soccer league where the kids would come and play soccer with each other. And that's what the soldiers did. They would go over there, drop their gear, and play soccer with the kids daily.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no real sense of being in a war zone. You know, we could have done the same thing in Chicago. So
it's just a big welfare program, a worldwide welfare program. Sorry, I'm trying not to say anything, but anyway, go ahead.
Mary Lou, you're on a radio talk show. You can talk.
So that's pretty much how we spent. And I can only assume that everybody else spent their first portion of their tour there doing the same thing. I wasn't reading about a lot of violence or whatnot, but, you know, the insurgency did come. The, you know, people don't like being occupied. I think what happened was that we disbanded the military, and it took them a while maybe to get reorganized into an insurgency. Of course, we sided, you know, that our government sided with one. And I'm not saying this from my military experience. I'm saying this from what I know of the news. You know, our government sided with one particular faction, and of course that pissed off the other faction, and mm-hmm. they started this insurgent movement. So,
go ahead, Brian. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say at the end of my first, what happened? The reason I wound up staying there for so long was at the end of my first tour, the military was not prepared for an extended war in Iraq. I think that everybody really did think this thing was going to be over very quickly. So when it got to the end of my first year there and it was time to leave, they didn't have anybody to replace us. So we wound up staying there for an extra 7 months. 7 months. The day before we were supposed to leave, we had already packed up all of our gear, turned in all of our equipment, like tents and camouflage and ammunition and air conditioners and refrigerators, like stuff that we had acquired while we were there. Like AC and refrigerators are very important when you live in that kind of climate. We turned all that stuff in and we didn't have it any longer. And literally the day before we were supposed to leave to drive back down to Kuwait, we got called into a meeting and they said, "You guys, we're not leaving and we don't know when we're leaving. We've been extended for an undetermined amount of time."
Like stop loss, right?
Yeah, we were absolutely. We were all stop loss at the time. And so we left out of Baghdad and we drove literally to the middle of the desert. It's sand as far as you can see in every direction. And we drove for like 4 hours. And then the guy that was leading the way just stopped and said, "Okay, here we are." And we all got out and said, "Where are we?" You know? And we stayed there. We stayed there for 7 months. So that's how
right
I wound
up doing
two tours.
Of nowhere, right?
Yeah. And that's how I wound up doing two tours, was because I didn't go twice. I only went once, but I stayed for almost two full tours of Iraq.
And so the last tour was 2005, is that correct?
No, it was essentially April until October of 2004.
Of 2004, okay. So have you been back to Iraq since?
I have not.
No.
Okay. Now tell me about your feelings about the war in Iraq now. I know that you joined because you felt you were fighting for freedom and for your country and for the right principles. How do you feel about the war in Iraq now, Ryan?
Well, war in Iraq is essentially over. And I didn't really join. I'm going to be honest. I didn't join because of a patriotic sense of duty. I joined because I was pretty much failing at everything else. I played football for a college in South Carolina, and I essentially flunked out of school. Which, you know, I'm not really ashamed of. I mean, it happens to a lot of 20-year-olds, right? So,
it's tough. Life is tough when you're 20. It's, you know, you're trying to get started. It's not easy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wasn't particularly responsible, and I wasn't particularly interested in college anyways. And so I did a lot of partying and made a lot of mistakes. And I got to a point where I was no longer in college, and I was working pretty much a dead-end job, and I just wanted a different, you know, I wanted to make a change in my life. That's why I joined the Army. It had nothing really to do with fighting for freedom or any kind of patriotic sense of helping my country.
Okay.
I just was, you know, I was looking out for myself, and I thought the military was a good route to take. And it was, you know, like it really was initially, I think, a good decision on my part, because you know, a lot of the things that I was having trouble with, like getting up in the morning and going to work, they teach you to do that in the Army. And they,
you don't
you know,
have
they
a
teach
choice.
Yeah, they do. They teach you to be personally responsible and to, you know, because you don't have a choice. So a lot of the values that I didn't have as a immature young adult, the Army did teach me. You know, and they gave me a job skill. I work in system administration, you know, like IT work, communicate, COMO. So that's why I joined, and that's what I did. And the Army, in that sense, fulfilled its obligation to me as to what I expected of it. You know, I said, I need somebody to teach me how to be an adult, and they did. That's one aspect of the military, and I do owe it that, because apparently I didn't have that ability to do that to myself, like every normal human does.
It gave you personal discipline, and that's what they talk about. But would you recommend to high school kids now or young adolescents now to join the Army, Ryan, knowing what you know from the Ron Paul campaign and watching
This is an area of great conflict, this internal conflict with me. And, again, it goes back to what I said about being really, really a hypocrite, because I'm so anti-government and I work for the federal government. So it's I have a bit of a crisis of conscience, because I'm at a point now where I've been in the Army for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 35 years old, and I don't really know anything else. Like, it's, you know, as you guys can probably guess, or you might even know from experience, it's hard to start a new career when you're 35 and you have, you know, I have mortgages and bills to pay, and there's no way that I could ever make the same amount of money in the civilian world that I make, you know, in the military after, you know, being, you know, working my way. This is my career. I've been promoted multiple times.
Yeah.
This is what I chose as my career field. And it's very difficult to come to the conclusion that the career that you've chosen is probably a net drag on society than it is a bonus.
Mm-hmm. And you're not alone. I know of other people who are in military or quasi-military positions, meaning they're working as civilians but for the military and against their own principles, but they need a job and they want to work, and the economy now has become a military-based economy, so it's very difficult to get a job that's not military-related and that's well-paid with security, health insurance, and everything else. And you can't blame people for just wanting to survive. So I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, I have my reasons. I have my rationalizations to stay in. But I also have friends like Nathan Cox. You guys might know my friend Mike Troy that I met in Iowa working for the Paul campaign. These guys, they got out. They said, this is wrong. I'm not going to do it anymore. And they got out. And I mean, tons of respect for them, because I know Nate's exactly what I envisioned for myself, having trouble finding a good career. You know, I believe he does a lot of odd jobs to make up the difference, you know, in the bills. I don't want to talk too much about his personal life, but, you know, he made a sacrifice to get out when he could have stayed in and been okay, you know, financially.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, I mean, I've lost a little bit of respect for myself in that aspect, because I've made the decision I'm staying in. I joined for the pension, you know. I like I said, this is my chosen career field, so I've decided I'm staying in, and I'm just going to make the best of it.
Well, thanks for being honest about it. Go ahead, Mary Lee.
I was going to say, you can educate your fellow soldiers. Do you ever do that?
Well, yeah, that's like I said, my rationalizations for staying in, I absolutely do. Like, not to the point of sedition, you know. I mean, I don't tell people not to follow orders or not to do
what they're supposed to do on a lawful order
basis. But, that's easy to say. We take an oath that we're not going to follow unlawful orders. Some people might consider it seditious to say you're not going to, but I would say that when you take your oath of enlistment, you actually take an oath not to follow unlawful orders. So it's very easy for me to say, no, I won't follow unlawful orders. When and if the order actually comes, it might be more difficult to say no, but not for me. Of course, there are a lot of purists that would say that we've already followed unlawful orders. You know, it's a fine line.
Yeah.
But every day I do. I educate as best I can. Oh, sorry. I do. I educate as best I can the people I work with.
That's good.
And you'd be surprised. They're very open to it. Most people in the Army are completely aware that these wars are bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not a secret. By now, everybody that's in the military has been to Iraq or Afghanistan. Even the ones that don't watch the news, if you explain it to them why the wars are bullshit, they agree with you. They're like, everybody knows it. I think even the average American citizen knows it. Everybody knows it. It's not a secret. Like, why are we in Iraq? Why are we in Afghanistan? Well, we're there for, like, oil, natural resources, you know, political Poppy. Geopolitical movements, military industrial complex. Everybody knows that corporations are making money. The government's losing money. People are dying. Like, it's not a secret. This is not something that's a revelation, particularly to people that have actually been to war, which is why Ron Paul has so much support among veterans.
Yeah.
Because to us, it's a no-brainer. Like, he says it. We reconcile that with our experiences, and I was like, yeah, that's exactly right. Like, that is exactly the way it is. So it's not – we follow on his foreign policy from experience because we've seen it firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's it's hard to understand for some people how you can manage to work for the Army and yet understand that it's all basically – baloney, what's going on over there. But at the same time, that is the conflict we're having in society right now, is people either having to struggle for a living and living principles of anarchy or voluntarism, or going the normal route of having a job with a salary and pension and paying taxes and having health insurance. And most of us have been brought up to have that kind of a lifestyle, and moving on into a different lifestyle that's breaking away from the system is tough. It's very tough. And we've had a few guests, though, who've managed to successfully do so, but their lifestyle is hard to understand for quote-unquote regular people. They don't pay taxes. They live in a completely different world. And off the grid, so it's not easy. So we have to give our hats off to people like this. But I have to say, I like your T-shirt on your Facebook page. It says "Nullify Bad Laws."
Yeah.
So when you're talking about
good, actually, it says good. What is it? Good people nullify bad laws, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I couldn't see the good, but I said I just could read "Nullify Bad Laws," and I'm reading lately about so many ridiculous and bad laws on the books. People can't have their kids in their front yard. They can't pose on Facebook with their child and a gun, sitting there with their kid and a gun on their belt or something like that. There's some guy who was apparently arrested because he was endangering his child. It's crazy stuff like that. And I think what it is boiling down to is the criminalization of regular people in the country, so that people become afraid to break out and do anything different. You know, people can't raise chickens in Atlanta, Georgia, in their backyard, for example. Mary Lou and I have a friend who can't do so. Would you say that's correct, Mary Lou?
Mm-hmm. She had a great chicken thing going, but she was forced to get rid of them, unfortunately.
Yeah, and there's other things. And just a generalized criminalization of civilian activities is what we're seeing. And, of course, prevents people from doing other things.
Yeah,
go ahead, Ryan.
This is something else that I follow pretty closely as far as what you're saying. Basically, everybody's become a criminal according to the laws that we have on the books. And
right.
I believe in our government we have what we call the big set of laws, like that's like the federal laws, you know, the big set of laws is like the Constitution. Like, this is the law that says the judges have the authority to do this. This is the law that says this is what congressmen can do. That's, you know, that's the big set of laws. And also the enumerated powers of our government and the Bill of Rights, like what is the responsibility of government as well. The little set of books, which is the little laws, are the ones that people come along, the do-gooders, and say, you can't have chickens in your yard, or you can't you can't grow a garden in your front yard, or you have to wear your seatbelt, or you can't drive 80 miles an hour on the interstate, or you can't, you know, if you take a picture with your kid and you have a gun and you're wearing a gun, when you take a picture with your kid, we can just arrest you for whatever. I mean, these little laws that have been so infiltrated down to the smallest area, police can literally arrest you at any time for anything. they don't have to have a reason anymore. And they definitely don't have to have a warrant, which is, to me, the little laws, the small sets of laws, are in violation of the large sets of laws, which say you do have to have a warrant to come in my house and, you know, go through my belongings. But that has not that doesn't stop cops anymore. They don't need a warrant. They just come and go as they please, and everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows that cops could do whatever they want. And these police state measures is something else that I follow very closely. No knock raids, and it's all drug related. It's all part of the drug war, which is why I am. It's another position of mine, along with non-intervention and sound money. The drug war is probably number three on my list.
I want to get right to that right after the break, because that's a very that's very close to my heart as well, and I really do want to get into the drug war, because this has been something that is enormous now. So this is Gadsden Rising. I'm Libby Gadsden with our special guest Ryan Treat, calling us from South Korea. Thanks very much, Ryan. And Mary Lou Van Houten, our co-host and producer. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
AntiWarTees.com is to promote anti-war activism, unlocking minds and shattering paradigms. By purchasing one of these t-shirts, you become an anti-war activist. www.antiwartees.com, bringing peace and human rights to the mainstream. Buy it, wear it, become it. Anti-war tees.
There's a saying that the only thing certain in life is death and taxes. Well, they should include hard drive failure as well. You can ensure your data is safe by using Maximum Archive's online backup solution. By securely backing up the Maximum Archive servers, your data is protected from fire, theft, or simple hard disk failure. Don't let your data go unprotected. Sign up for Maximum Archive today. Use partner code Freedomizer at checkout time and help fund the Freedomizer Radio Network. That's MaximumArchive.com.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea.
Thank you for tuning in to Freedomizer Radio, where we have a 24/7 chat room where you can come and share what's going on in the world with people of like mind. Anything and everything against the New World Order. Dial 347-324-3704 to catch our live show, beginning at 9 in the morning Pacific Standard Time, Monday through Friday till midnight, and 9 to 9 on Saturday and Sunday. Take us to the beach. Take us to the park. Take us on a walk with the dog. Only on Freedomizer Radio.
Greetings, this is Blake the Eccentric, and I want to invite you to check out my new show on Freedomizer Radio, The Eccentric Perspective. It's sort of a red pill, blue pill, going down the rabbit hole kind of show, featuring outside-the-box politics, philosophy, and gonzo journalism. But be warned, with knowledge comes responsibility, and you might not see the world the same way again. As I will attempt to open your mind, speak to your common sense, and challenge your critical thinking skills. So please join me Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon to 1:30 Pacific Time. Once again, that's Eccentric Perspective, only on Freedomizer Radio.
This is Debbie.
And I'm Michael, along with CD, the Constitutional Defender Dog. Is mainstream media giving you the real stories, or are they just telling you what they want you to hear?
Join us for Securing Liberty on Freedomizer Radio, Thursday evenings at 11 p.m. Central.
We'll be joined by great guests, discuss interesting and important topics, current events, maybe even a little humor. Be prepared for anything.
It will be 90 minutes of information sure to help you on your quest for truth. So join Securing Liberty at 11 p.m. Central on Freedomizer Radio.
Hello, campers. This is your Uncle Scott here asking you to join me every Friday night at 9 p.m. Pacific Time right here on FreedomizerRadio.com. You know, my friends, we're inundated daily with information from all the various sources. Media outlets, commercial businesses, government agencies, schools, universities, and then our friends and family, who also get that information from the same sources. Well, that information is what influences our decisions every day, what we want to eat, where we want to live, where our kids go to school, what kind of medical help we'll seek, what kind of entertainment we are interested in. I'm thinking, if you don't have all the right information, how sound are those decisions? I want to bring you all the information so that you can make good, clear decisions about your life and how you want to live. With all the right information in your hand, you have the real power to choose.
You're listening to Freedomizer Radio at freedomizerradio.com. Join us in the chat room. You can also listen and participate by calling 347-324-3704. Like Freedomizer Radio on Facebook and follow Libby Gadsden on Facebook. We're back.
Well, thank you, Mary Lou, and this is Gadsden Rising. I'm Libby Gadsden, and our special guest is Ryan Treat, and we're with Mary Lou Van Houten, our co-host and producer. Ryan, we left the last segment of the show, and we said we were going to get into your thoughts about the drug war. Give us a synopsis about how you feel about the drug war, please.
Well, people's knee-jerk reaction to the drug war is typically, you know, drugs are bad, and government has to do something about drugs because people do drugs and do bad things. Obviously, from a liberty perspective, you say, you know, I say, well, no, I own my own body, therefore I should be allowed to put into it whatever I choose. That's essentially how I look at it. Now, I don't do drugs. You know, I'm in the Army. I couldn't do drugs if I wanted to and keep my job. So, and I don't necessarily have a problem with people doing drugs. I have a problem with other things that they might do, you know, like if a person becomes addicted to heroin and then steals my radio to support his heroin habit, I have a problem with him stealing my radio, but I don't have a problem with him doing heroin. But the drug war, when people, in order to get people to see why the drug war is bad, I often compare it to post-Civil War Jim Crow laws, because it's a war that mostly affects only minority communities. Like white people that get caught with cocaine or marijuana, they don't get the same. First of all, they don't even get pulled over as much as minorities. Second of all, they don't get searched as much as minorities once they've been pulled over. Third, they don't get arrested as much. Like every step of the law enforcement process involving the drug war, white people are exponentially less likely to be involved in that step. When I say the Jim Crow laws, I say that they're laws that are made pretty much for minorities. I mean, they're the ones that are feeling the brunt of this drug war. I think it has a huge effect on minority communities. You know, to take away parents, you know, from children because they are. It's a cycle where they enforce these laws, and then the kids grow up and they don't get, you know, they're in broken families or their dad's a convict in and out of jail. Because, you know, what happens when you go to prison as a nonviolent offender? More often than not, you come out as a violent offender. So then you become, you know, then you come out, then you do something that is a crime against a person or a property. And then you go back to prison, and then the whole time, you know, the kids are being raised in these broken families, and what do? They grew up and do the same thing. So it's a horrible. Right. I think it's a horrible cycle, and I think I would even go further
to say it's a class war, because if you've got money, you're not going to go to jail for drugs. If you don't have money, you will. So it's
against
white people and poor black people and immigrants, and it's all for anybody who can afford a decent attorney or who has the right connections.
Yeah,
you're not going to go to jail.
Right.
Yeah. And unfortunately, a large amount of poor people happen to be either immigrants, black, or of another race. You know, white people tend to be richer.
Right. I would. You're absolutely right. It's got way more to do with socioeconomic level than it does ethnicity or color of your skin. You're absolutely right, and I should have pointed that out.
My argument against the Trump war has nothing to do with you're correct too. It does end up being a war on minorities.
So, my opposition to the drug war has nothing to do with anybody's vision of whether or not you should or should not do drugs. My opposition to the drug war is that the drug war is really a domestic war on our liberties, because they take this idea of we have to stop drugs, and the police departments and the sheriff's departments and the federal agents will do anything. They will violate any right. They will trample any person's freedom, all in the name of ending drugs. And I don't think they even care about the drugs. Like, I don't know what their end game is, but it's really not about drugs. But they use the red herring of the drugs to do whatever it takes to break down your door and throw you in jail. You know, there is no limit to what right they will violate in order to get their man when it comes to the drug war. And that's the real danger of the drug war, because it's a domestic war on your civil liberties, your right to privacy, your right to a fair trial, your right to due process, your right to travel, your right to free speech, whatever is all – they will infringe any of that. They will take you out if they feel like you have a joint in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's mostly, it seems to me, against potheads. I mean, this is a plant that grows freely in nature, and people are not permitted to either to grow it, use it, or touch it or anything. And this is very weird, I think, to outlaw a plant that grows like a weed. So,
right.
That's what I think really the concentration is right now, is against cannabis users more than anything.
Well, there's a lot to say really about it. Like, for example, prohibition is not something until the last 50 years that the people understood and the government understood as something that the government could do. You know, for example, in 1922 maybe, when they passed prohibition of alcohol, they had to amend the Constitution to prohibit alcohol. And then, you know, at the end of prohibition, they had to make another amendment. So, like, I want to say, like, the 17th and 18th or 18th and 19th amendments to the Constitution are the prohibition and the end of prohibition of alcohol. They understood that they had to have two-thirds of the states, you know, go have a constitutional convention to change the Constitution to prohibit alcohol. But you fast forward 30 years to 1952, I believe it was-ish, or 56 maybe, when they actually made marijuana illegal, they just did it by decree. Somebody, you know, the king got up in front of us, and the king got up and said, now marijuana is illegal. You know, citizens, you must obey the king. And and there was no vote. There was no, you know, there was no representation. They just said, this is the way it is, and started throwing people in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And which is another part of it.
And that's what we have.
The prison
industrial
complex.
That's what we have right now. We have patrimony. Yeah.
Yeah. The drug war is way, way, way more than just are drugs bad. You know, like that seems to be the argument that everybody stops at. Like, the vast majority of people can't get past whether or not they think drugs are good or bad. But there's just so much more to it. It's a corporate industry. The drug war is a corporate-driven industry. They make money off of it. The state makes money, the corporations make money, and the people suffer. And it's all people, you know. People that don't care about it sometimes, unfortunately, find out the hard way that it's affecting their lives. And by finding out the hard way, I'm talking about people who are sitting at home watching TV with their wife and kids, and the DEA busts down their front door and puts their kids in handcuffs and hauls the man and woman off to jail, only to find out, oops, we raided the wrong house.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And this happens every day. You know, Libby and Mary Lou, this is something that happens every single day. You know, or say there is a grandma, you know, or maybe she has a son that's selling weed out of his house. Well, yeah, so they break down the front door and throw flashbang grenades in the windows and, you know, and burn the daughter or the granddaughter that's living there. This happens, you know, I follow a lot of these drug war interventions that happened. There's a guy right now that's actually getting ready to write a book called Valco. I can't remember his first name. But basically, it's a book of botched raids. And he's been releasing one botched raid a day on Huffington Post. He's got a blog on HuffPo. Radley Valco is the guy's name. And he's been releasing every day from now until June when his book goes on sale, he's releasing a story on his blog about a botched raid. So I've been following these very closely. I run a Facebook page called Policing the Police, and I post them up there on a daily basis. So, and they're all drug related. All these infringements on each person's liberty is drug related. And the cops, who I'm not a fan of, police in general, they don't care about you. They have this hard nosed mentality that if you know they're drug warriors, and even if they think it's wrong, they still go through with whatever it is they think they need to do to get their man. And so often their man is not even guilty of anything, no less being guilty of drug offenses. They're not even guilty of anything. So
well, like you said, the drug war fuels so many people. You start with the cops on the street, then you get to the jails, which are run by private corporations, then you get to the court system, which employs a whole lot of people, and then you get to the attorneys, who all profit from whoever is trying to stay out of jail. And then it goes on to if they do go to prison, it pushes up all the profits for the prison owners, because so many of our prisons are privately owned.
Right, and the prisons now are employing their prisoners for 25 cents an hour to, make shirts or put them on. They put them, but they're contracting out their prisoners to go work in private industry for pennies on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
It's 21st century slavery, essentially, is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're also making weapons, from what I hear, too.
Well, something else now is the drug wars is federally funded, not just through the DEA, but from the Department of Homeland Security. These towns and cities throughout our country are getting tanks, they're getting guns, they're getting equipment, they're getting funded by the federal government, which is under the guise of fighting terrorism. But there is no terrorism in my hometown. What's in my hometown is drugs. Mm-hmm. So the cops take this money and they put it towards fighting the drug war, which is, it's not unusual at all for a small city to have a tank or two and a SWAT team.
And,
they're gearing up for a war on the people. What else? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have a tank, who are you going to war with? You know, like, what do you need a tank for? The only people you're going to war with are your citizens. There's no standing armies here that you're going to war with. If you have a tank, that tank is to fight a war against the people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really against the people when you talk about the drug war, and it's also a huge problem for people in neighboring countries such as Mexico, who are dealing with the weird conundrum of trying to fight a drug war, which they are desperately, for the United States. At the same time, the United States has been found shipping arms over to the drug dealers in Mexico.
Yeah.
So, and they can't wrap their minds around this. They're thinking, wait a minute, I just lost my uncle, who was a police officer, or my son. We thought we were fighting the good fight, and now we're finding out that CIA is sending weapons to these people that are killing us and our family and our police officers and making our lives miserable. So this is a war that's funded on both sides by our government.
That's a big irony too. Is it's not a secret now. Everybody, I mean, some people might call it a conspiracy theory, but it's pretty well known that the CIA is importing drugs. Darkness. What was the guy that wrote the book? He wrote the book called Something Darkness, he wound up shooting himself in the head twice. Guy that wrote the book, Gary Webb. He wrote a book, and it was about the CIA importing drugs. And it's like I said, it's pretty common knowledge now that our government is not only involved in the process of fighting the drug war, but they're also in the process of supplying the American people with drugs to fund other illegal activities, like, you know, the Nicaraguans or whatever. I don't know what they're doing now. You know, we won't find out what they did with all this money for 10 years.
when it blows up in our faces again.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
Gary Webb wrote an expose, and I can't remember the name of the book.
Dark Alliance.
Dark Alliance.
Right?
That's it. Yeah, that's it. He
Dark
wrote Dark
Alliance.
Alliance.
Okay.
And then Gary Webb later on wound up committing suicide by shooting himself in the head two times, which I think is a pretty amazing, pretty amazing feat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
are you
trying to tell me that that maybe it wasn't a suicide?
Yeah, maybe it wasn't. So
that's
the real hypocrite. And you know, the government is guilty of this over and over and over again. But just in this is just a great example of the hypocrisy of our government. You know, they fight the drug war in the open, and then behind closed doors, they're actually funding the drug war. They're actually
mm-hmm.
you know, participating
mm-hmm.
in the import and export of drugs. It has a lot to do, I don't know the specifics, but it has a lot to do with liquidity and cash flow. It's $500 billion is how much is spent on drugs every year worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 500
yeah.
black market dollars. You know, that's $500 that keeps the wheels of economies turning, I guess, through banking. You know, a lot of people think that invasion of Panama had a lot to do with the Panamanian Central Bank and basically they were keeping I don't want to talk about specifics because I'm not an expert really, but I know a little bit about it, where the Panamanian Bank was laundering drug money, and Noriega basically was not going to keep his mouth shut any longer, so he had to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
People who are familiar with this are going to know what I'm talking about. Maybe someone will call in and set us straight.
Well, we know about was it the Red? I don't know his first name, but Red X was REDDIX. Mary Lou was recently found.
Hanging.
He's only his company was called Red X. That's right.
And he
was found hanging. And he said, if anybody says I kill myself, don't believe it. I'm not suicidal. I'm not depressed. And I'm not going to kill myself. And apparently there was a rumor his teeth were knocked out as well. So somehow he managed to knock his teeth out before he hung himself. I totally agree with you, Ryan. There's more of these types of assassinations and apparent suicides than we think. And they're not getting the media attention because the media is now the arm of the government. So we're not getting all the angles of what's really going on. What do you think about mainstream media and how they're reporting things like this, Ryan?
Well, I don't watch it. I don't know.
Yeah, anymore. Me either.
Oh, that's right. You don't have TV. I watch a little TV here, and I can tell you it's even in French TV. They're really camouflaging all the facts and what's really going on.
Yeah, I don't.
You just
trust,
don't hear about opposing opinions.
Conspiracy. That's kind of another. Thing right now that's going on with the Ron Paul people, Ron Paul movement. A lot of people that supported Ron Paul come from the a lot of people call it a derogatory term, but the conspiracy theory movement. Mm-hmm. They were naturally drawn to Ron Paul because here's this guy saying government's bad, mm-hmm. government's evil. You know, they've done a lot of bad things. It's only natural for the people who already believe that to
mm-hmm.
latch on to Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And now. There, I believe there's a concerted effort amongst the politicos in the Ron Paul Inc. to kind of separate themselves from these types of people.
I don't like that at all. Anyway, sorry.
I know, but mm-hmm. I'm on the fence. The way I view all conspiracies, be it 9/11 or Benghazi or the moon landing or Gulf of Tonkin or whatever, the Osama bin Laden killing. The way I view all conspiracies is government lies. That's
mm-hmm.
what they do. They
mm-hmm.
lie about everything. Biggest thing to the littlest thing. So no matter what conspiracy we're talking about, I approach it from the point that they're lying about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
So I don't have any specific. I'm not really big into it.
Mm-hmm.
As far as making it a point of my it's not something that I dwell on a lot. But when people
mm-hmm.
do
mm-hmm.
say, oh, you know, they did this, this, and this, I'm like, well, maybe they did or maybe they didn't. But they're definitely lying about it. You know, they definitely
mm-hmm.
are definitely are covering something up. They definitely are not investigating it thoroughly. It's definitely been whitewashed. And what they're telling you through their media spokespeople is not what really happened. So that's pretty much my approach to conspiracy at large, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, if the government's talking, if their lips are moving, they're lying. I think that's the way I look at it, too. And the media as well, mainstream media. I get all my information from the Internet. And I used to get a little bit more from Al Jazeera and RT News, but I just don't feel right about that either somehow. I'm now just gleaning as I can from a whole lot of different sources and just putting my own two cents together. There has been a lot of talk about Sandy Hook being a completely phony event. But mm-hmm. on the media, if you just watch any kind of media, all you hear about is that this really happened and this is a real event. But Mary Lou and I had two guests on two nights in a row who both disagreed that it actually even took place. Right, Mary Lou?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how huge hoaxes can be played on people. There were so many holes in the Sandy Hook shooting incident that people really started to shout and bang drums about it, but no one heard them because they didn't get any airtime on radio, mainstream radio, or mainstream TV. So if you're getting a biased viewpoint from the media that's coming straight from the government, they can tell you basically anything they want to tell you. They can tell you Martians are invading the Earth just like Orson Welles did. And if you don't hear anything else, you're going to believe it. Well, most people are, I think.
Yeah, I think the real danger of the media to me is that it's an echo chamber.
Mm-hmm.
You have people on the left and people on the right, you know, the two-party paradigm, and everybody on the right has a certain what they think is a certain set of beliefs, and they're told because they watch Fox News every day, you're right, you're right, you're right. So they are convinced 100%, 30% of this country follows the Republican Party, do or die, and they are convinced that the red team is the team to be on and everything that they believe is absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the other 30% of the country that's on the blue team, and they watch CNN and MSNBC, and they're told every day by the talking heads on MSNBC that they are right, and everything that they believe is true and correct and accurate. And they're never going to budge, and neither team's ever going to budge. And what that creates is people who are willing to go to great lengths to support the team that they believe that they're on and is right, no matter what. What they mm-hmm. fail to see mm-hmm. is that they're essentially on the same team. They think that it's red versus blue, when in reality it's government versus the people.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
that's the real danger of mainstream media, because they enforce people's beliefs that their side is right, and they set
mm-hmm.
up this they
yes.
set up this, like I said, this left versus right paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
Which
yes.
nobody which no, we're completely almost unable to break out of, except that through apathy. The only way, what's really killing it is apathy. You know, less people voted in the last election than that did vote. Like, everybody says Barack Obama won the election because he got 19 million votes. Well, there's 300 million voters in America, so the majority voted for nobody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. it really, really says something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's exactly. And I think that that's absolutely right. There's no longer a left-right paradigm. I'm not sure there ever was, but there maybe was a semblance of such back a long time ago. But right now, we have no left-right. I think people are wasting their breath, wasting their time trying to fight that phony paradigm. It's all about the people, and not the citizens, but the people versus the government, because the people that give the government power. When you start calling yourself a citizen, then you're starting already down a slippery slope to say that the government controls you. So
right.
we're getting
well,
out of
you know,
time here, Ryan.
Oh, man, I can talk for another hour.
I'm going to give you the last 30 seconds. Tell us what you want to say, because you got up so early and you've been a great guest. So you got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, 30 seconds. Okay, so
sorry.
The Republican Party. We never did get a chance to talk about the Republican Party. Nobody's asking you to support the Republican Party. Which if you want to stay engaged politically, what you got to do is you got to find individuals like Ron Paul that are running inside the Republican Party and support them, like Tom Davis. Mm-hmm. I think you guys, Mary Lou, you definitely know who Tom Davis is. He's
mm-hmm.
somebody who I'm definitely going to be supporting in 2014. Everybody, I think everybody knows now, he's probably going to run for Lindsey Graham's seat.
Mm-hmm.
if there is going to be a political solution, that's how it's going to happen, is by supporting individuals, not parties, in the political
mm-hmm.
process.
Mm-hmm.
And people can make an argument against that. I can make an argument against it myself, but I can also make an argument for it. So that's
mm-hmm.
That's my plan for the next 4 years anyway.
Well, I think that's a great way to end this program, Ryan, and I hope you come back with us. We really enjoyed having you, and thanks for getting up so early. And and I think that's great advice to everybody, is follow the people, not the party. And this has been Gadsden Rising. I'm Libby Gadsden with Ryan Treats, our special guest, calling us in South Korea. Hope to talk to you again, Ryan. And Mary Lou Van Houten, our co-host and producer. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye-bye.
Bye.